go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Here we go, off and running on this final broadcast day, not the final day of, but the final broadcast day of April 2022. This is The Horn, headon.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. That's where you go if you'd like to be part of the Merry Wacky Zany real-time multimedia madcap extravaganza that is The Horn chat room in the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday. 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, all time zones in between, and the great globe round. You are more than welcome to pop into the chat room. If you do, you will be greeted by early arrivers Kid Mark and Roger in Oregon and Squeaky, and others as they come in through the course of the evening. So, hail, hail, the gang's almost all here. I'm terribly sorry about my absence over the last couple of days. This has been an incredibly busy week. I've had Zoom meetings and online meetings and in-person meetings, and it's a lot. Unfortunately, they've all taken place during the time that this program is, generally speaking, live. So that being the case, again, my apologies. And we have thanks to send out to our subscribers whose partial support for the program came in during my absence. So what that means is we say thank you to our 29th, 28th, and 27th day of the month subscribers. In particular, we say thank you to Sharon. Thank you, Sharon. And thank you to Randy Radar. Thank you to Suman. Thank you to Charlene in Rogues Island. Thank you to Brendan and to Janice. Thank you to Robert in Australia. Thank you, David. Thank you, each and every one of you who keeps all of this going month in and month out so that there can be independent, progressive, liberal broadcasting, okay? Let's see. Don't see Sparky in the chat room, so I'm not sure quite exactly what's going to go on with Friday on the front porch. I suppose that's a wait-and-see kind of thing. But let's, and by the way, where's the fundraising goal for April? Well, this is grim. This is grim. We will say that the fundraising goal is like $1,500. That's actually less than what it should be, but if we can just raise that, we will be doing monumentally well. Please feel, we can start things. Thank you to Ralphs with a $25 challenge. If we can raise $25, that'll double to $50, and we'll call it $1,450 to finish the month of April okay and not have to start May in a, in a hole. We started April in a hole, didn't we? one of the recent months we did. So that'll get us going. And by the way, hi to Peter and Libby in New York. Asking, are you okay? No show since Tuesday here in New York on the literally old iPad, which we always listen to you on, yet Malloy is current in his uploads. Checked White Rose Society, no shows from you since Tuesday either. Hope you're okay, but can you please advise what is apparently going on with your show? Hi, Peter and Libby. There was no show since Tuesday because Wednesday I had I was invited to participate in a panel discussion on diversity, equity, and inclusion as a member of the trans community, and it was a fascinating discussion with genuinely impressive panelists, and that took a couple of hours. It ended shortly after the program would have ended, and then yesterday, and I do want to talk about this because it was really interesting. Yesterday, I went to the campus of Bridge Valley Community and Technical College, which is down in South Charleston, West Virginia, in the Valley, because they had invited me to a Meet the Candidates forum. They're doing great things down there. Among other things, they are inaugurating. They've got an excellent nursing program, and they're inaugurating an entire floor of their building is going to be a hospital simulator for their nursing students. And it is named the Booker T. Washington Wing, which I thought a fitting tribute to a man who was, born in what is now West Virginia. Booker T. Washington, an early leading light in African-American education. He and people like W.E.B. Du Bois did not get along, and I think they had an uneasy peace, but they had completely different goals for equality in the African-American community. Although ultimately, at the Southern Exposition speech in Atlanta, Booker T. Washington did say something that proved to be quite prophetic, but anyway, they're doing great things down there, and they've got a branch campus here in Fayette County, so they invited candidates from their entire service area. I was the only Fayette Countyan who showed up, and that meant that I had to drive, about an hour and 20 minutes down and an hour and 20 minutes back, and I asked my new dear friend, Miss Bobby, to accompany me. Because doing all of this stuff by yourself just really sucks. And so we all got down there. Everybody got a few minutes to speak. We mingled a bit. But, you know, West Virginia now has a Republican supermajority in the House. And a lot of maggot Republicans in this state. But that was one of the more interesting aspects of this Meet the Candidates forum. I sat through a bunch of speeches, pretty good ones, really. Just on the general metric of political speechify, and I'm not talking about the philosophies or anything. And like I said, they were mostly Republicans. I think there were maybe two, three Democrats tops who spoke. I was one of them. But here's the thing. Not a single Republican uttered the name of their God Emperor. Not one. The word Donald Grump was not to be heard, which struck me as at least a little bit Well, odd. But there we were. And I tried to enjoy
my time there. They put out a little spread with some crudité and some fromage. Didn't touch that. Took some signs in so people could see my pretty, pretty logo signs. My primary opponent didn't think it worth his time. The incumbent didn't think it worth his. So that meant that where my district, District 51, was concerned, I was the only game in town. But I listened, and I heard all the buzzwords. You know how it goes. I heard all the buzzwords about, I live my faith every day. I'm a devoted Christian, and I let my Christian faith determine the way in which I go about, or I will go about doing my job in the legislature. There are candidates there for Senate and for House. And one particular young woman was from the county where we used to live. And so when it was over, first of all, I stood up and I said, "Hi, my name's Robin. Let's deal with the elephant in the room. I'm a trans woman, and I'm a very happy, proud, out trans woman." And then proceeded to tell them a little bit more about myself, just sort of ad-libbing all along the way. I didn't have any prepared remarks, because you never know which way the conversation's going to go. But I had heard a lot of burbling about fiscal conservatism. So I said, "So while I am a progressive Democrat, and have always been a Democrat, never been anything but a Democrat, and I have participated in efforts to fight to save West Virginians from being poisoned to death by a certain industry." And that was another interesting thing. There was very little coal washing going on, very little, clean coal or any of that silly horse shit going on. But I said, while I've done these things, and I am progressive and liberal, I said, "I need you to understand, I'm a fiscal conservative. Let me give you an example." And I said, "I consider it to be legislative malpractice and monumentally stupid along the way," and there were some incumbent Republicans in there, "monumentally stupid along the way to throw tens and tens and tens of thousands of West Virginia taxpayer dollars down the toilet defending an unconstitutional bill that bullies and attacks the most fragile, most vulnerable segment of our population, our trans kids." And went on at length and explained, you know, how many trans people there probably are in West Virginia, that sort of thing. And I could feel a wave of cringing sort of hit me throughout the room. And I got a round of, you know, little golf clap, polite applause. And then I went swanning around the room afterward, meet and greet. And like I said, this young woman who's, I live my Christian values. I walked up to her and I said, "Well, I just wanted to introduce myself. You spoke so nicely." And shook her hand and said, "You know, I know your daddy." "You do?" "Yes, I do. I bought a car from him once. And I used to know your parts manager there," and just rattled off a few different names of people still known and respected in the community. I said, "Knew them all. Good friends." And I said, I said, "Oh yeah, we lived for a while there, and what a place it is." And she was, and she was, it was hilarious because it was, you could, oh, because I'm sure she's shit on trans people left and right. She's not in office yet, but she hopes to be a state senator. I hope she's not. But it was a delight. And a lot of fun. And I'm looking, you know, in the era of COVID, even though Anthony Fauci, Dr. Fauci, says that we're not in the pandemic phase anymore, it's still deadly. And face-to-face, person-to-person meetings are still fairly rare. And, you know, there were these horrible, self-hating women who stood up and said, "Ha, I'm pro-life," which is a way of saying, "I will support the patriarchy and whatever it wants to do to me." And it really, that was cringy for me, because I just can't understand how anybody, and that phrase, well, never mind, we'll get to that in a little bit. Scott in San Diego, with a question about these campaign visits. When you do them, is there also an effort at each one to get new voters registered? I'm thinking young voters would find you a good candidate to support, so getting them registered would be helpful for the primary and general elections. Well, not at this one, because the time frame for registering to vote, at least in West Virginia, or for changing registrations, for at least this primary, is over. So in short, no. Because it wouldn't have any impact on the primary. By the way, not in the pandemic phase. Stephen New York says, "My brother, vaxxed and boosted, just tested positronic." That's good, positronic. So we still have to be careful. I still have to get my booster. I was talking to Wynette about that earlier today, and I said, let's, she said, "Let's do it tomorrow." I said, "Okay." And then, it was really nice to not be the only trans girl in the room, to have Miss Bobby with me. She's an absolutely delightful soul, and we had a great conversation on the way back home. Got in the door about 11, and, well, here we are. The primary, I'll remind everybody, is May the 10th. So that is, 11 days away? Yeah. And so there may be a few more days, like days this past week, that interrupt the broadcast schedule. But after that, not a lot. And by the way, I had a nice note from our buddy Zed, who will be at the Horn Inn, and wanted to know what kind of things were going to be on the menu. And I've been making notes about that, and told him that, there'll be pulled pork, there'll be brisket, if I can get briskets. That has proven to be a challenge. If not, we'll have a hickory smoked top sirloin tip roast, and slice it paper thin, and serve it with, it'll be hickory smoky, serve it with horseradish, that kind of thing. There'll be my trifold pork loin. We'll do some fried fish. We'll do some homemade biscuits, maybe some dirty gravy and sausage gravy for breakfasts. And then, of course, we'll also be going out and seeing the majesty, the beauty, and the wonder that is the New River Gorge. So I'm really looking forward to that. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. As for COVID and Dr. Fauci, Jeremy says, Dr. Fauci walked that back a bit after he first said it this week. We're still in a pandemic due to the rise in severe but not deadly cases in younger children and adults. Yeah, that certainly did ring sort of tinny. But it's interesting that I would have this note from Stephen, New York. The subject line on it is, I'm pro-life. And, you know, just off the top of my head, the first thing I thought when I read that subject line and when I heard it at time after time after time from self-hating women yesterday and from womb-hating, women-hating men, misogynistic men, fetus fetishists, I realized how far behind the eight ball our side of this struggle is. Because they should not, no self-hating woman, no misogynistic man should ever use that phrase that there wasn't somebody there ready to push back and say, like hell you are. You're pro-blastocyst. You're certainly not pro-life. And now with all the attacks on vulnerable children in this country, it's even more clear. But Steve wrote me a note earlier saying, I'm pro-life. I think this is going to be long, so bear with me. Allow me to relay something before I get into the meat of the subject line. You'll see where I'm going. I was listening to Sam Cedar today. He ran good to know Sam's back to good health. He ran a clip of a toad legislature from Missouri lamenting the fact that an anti-abortion rights bill had an exception for an ectopic pregnancy. When he asked the question, it became crystal clear to me that he had no idea what an ectopic pregnancy is. Somewhere in the far reaches of my brain, I remembered my ninth grade health class or some high school or equally rudimentary health class I took somewhere along the line that an ectopic pregnancy was one in which the fertilized egg implanted in the fallopian tubes, or somewhere that's not the uterus. I also remembered from the basic health class that for a pregnancy to even have a chance of success, the zygote must embed in the uterine wall. Yes. Then I, in my curiosity and desire to not judge a situation out of ignorance, looked up the term ectopic pregnancy, and here's what I found from the Mayo Clinic, realizing, of course, that the Mayo Clinic is a dodgy third-rate medical chop shop. Well played. Pregnancy begins with a fertilized egg. Normally, the fertilized egg attaches to the lining of the uterus. An ectopic pregnancy occurs when a fertilized egg implants and grows outside the main cavity of the uterus. An ectopic pregnancy most often occurs in a fallopian tube, which carries eggs from the ovaries to the uterus. This type of ectopic pregnancy is called a tubal pregnancy. Sometimes an ectopic pregnancy occurs in other areas of the body, such as the ovary, abdominal cavity, or the lower part of the uterus, cervix, which connects to the vagina. An ectopic pregnancy can't proceed normally, the fertilized egg can't survive, and the growing tissue may cause life-threatening bleeding if left untreated. In short, an abortion for an ectopic pregnancy amounts to removing a zygote that will not survive, it cannot survive, its single, sole, only purpose is to prevent serious damage or death to the woman, period, end of discussion. The exception for the ectopic pregnancy that turd was blathering and spewing on about is the pro-life position. Not having that being an exception will only endanger the life of the woman. Again, period, end of discussion. It will endanger and perhaps end the life of the pregnant person. Because you know what? Trans men get pregnant too. Just saying. Now, I'll get to the subject line in my email. I'm pro-life. The right wing has bastardized, tarnished, and distorted words such as Christian, liberal, patriot, etc. They have equally done so with the term pro-life. Being in favor of the death penalty is not pro-life. Being in favor of war is not pro-life. Wanting an exception to an abortion ban being an ectopic pregnancy is not pro-life. The more I think about it, the more I have the thought that being pro-choice, as we have defined that term in public discourse, is in fact actually pro-life. Number one, I make no bones about my personal views and issues with abortion. I have real problems with it. However, as a man, my opinion is just an opinion. I do not think I have the license to opine about policy matters related to the issue. If a woman asks me, I will tell her my view. I will never tell a woman what she should do. I would modify that, Steve. If a woman were to ask you, and God only knows why, no insult, I think your answer is, I don't have a dog in the hunt. It's none of my business. I don't have an opinion. And that's about the back to the matter. And by the way, just going back to the ectopic pregnancy business, remember, you know, stupidity is a virus that spreads faster than COVID. Now, this was some jackass in Missouri blathering on. Let me guess. It was a white guy, right? But it wasn't that long ago, a couple or 3 years ago, in Ohio. Remember the Republican member of the Ohio legislature who wanted to have an affirmative law in the Buckeye state that said that a doctor should have to be forced to harvest an ectopic pregnancy and re-implant it in a woman's uterus, that it could not be aborted, which it's going to result in a spontaneous abortion anyway? Remember that, idiot? Yeah. The mostly male, misogynistic, anti-abortion jackasses know less about human female anatomy than they know about animal husbandry. That's fact. But they burble joyfully along in their ignorance and want, and the source of all of this, of course, is a desire to compel everyone in the country to follow the dictates of their weird, twisted, cultish religion. Which, by the way, while it is some alleged version of Christianity, is basically a heresy. So Ohio then, Missouri now, idiots all. I have a dear friend who almost died from an ectopic pregnancy. The issue means something to me. Number two, Steve says, whether abortion is legal or not, women will have them. Wealthy women will have the resources to go wherever they need to order it in order for it to be safe as it can be and minimize its effect on a woman's health. Poorer women will not. The pro-life position, as it is currently articulated, will lead to more dead women, period. End of discussion. In short, keeping it legal and safe means fewer dead women. Given that is the case, that is the actual pro-life position. And let's take a minute with this word, abortion itself. The scientific term, and I suspect most women know this, some men, men generally are more versed in matters of women's health on the progressive and liberal side of things because, well, because they're not awful and nearly as awful and patriarchal as right-wing misogynistic men. But the scientific term for what we call, and this word needs to go away forever, miscarriage, is actually spontaneous abortion. Spontaneous abortion. And spontaneous abortion happens in about 50% of all human pregnancies, which is consistent with the rest of nature. Think about an oak tree. Think about how many acorns an oak tree produces. I am not equating women with oak trees. I'm talking about the reproduction of life on planet Earth. If one oak tree sprang up from every acorn that falls, this planet would be nothing but oak trees. And it's like I've joked in the past about that line from that sappy song, I believe that for every drop of rain that falls, a flower grows. If that was the case, there'd be so damn many flowers there wouldn't be any room for any people. Same with oak trees. So instead, life evolves so that there are little creatures out there that love to eat acorns. There are creatures out there that eat flowers. It's the same with walnuts, pecans. It's the same with anybody who's ever raised a garden in West Virginia and not had an electric fence knows it's the same with tomatoes and corn. By the way, deer are rats with antlers. But that's the point. In cases of life reproducing, it overproduces so that a smaller percentage has a chance of actually being successful. And then within the successful ones, that's where evolution does its work via its primary tool, which is, of course, mutation. And successful mutations reproduce again. Unsuccessful mutations are just unsuccessful, and they don't happen again. They don't enter the gene pool. Darwin noticed this with, some creature in the Galapagos Islands. He posited it with regard to why, and hi, Joey, hi, Giraffrey, hi, Junior, hi, Joey, too. Posited this with regard to the question of why giraffes have the long necks. Because short-necked giraffes couldn't reach the taller branches for the yummy, yummy leaves, and therefore died out. So it all makes a kind of sense, and it's sort of elegant, really. So the word miscarriage needs to disappear, because to miscarry makes it sound like the pregnant person did something wrong, when they probably did not. Very probably did not. Just didn't work out. But, unfortunately, the word persists. But I can have my own little private crusades on the language. That's okay. And abortion, spontaneous abortion, needs to be a word that we use early and often. And anti-choice is kind of clunky. How about anti-freedom? Why don't we call the misogynistic men of the right wing and their self-hating female enablers, why don't we call them what they are? Un-American. God, they've beaten us over the head with that for years. Why don't we take a turn at that? You know, when I sat there yesterday, let me go back to Steve's note. Number three, that mission, the Missouri legislator's blatant ignorance about ectopic pregnancies makes it crystal clear that they are not pro-child or pro-life. They're anti-woman. They are misogynistic because the only outcomes from an untreated ectopic pregnancy are dead or severely harmed women. Four. This issue, debate, discussion is not about abortion. It's not about bodily autonomy. That is a subset of the issue. It is about women's autonomy, period, end of discussion. It's clear that the actual pro-life position is the position that leaves women's autonomy to women. The actual pro-life position is supporting women. It is about providing support to women and children to make sure that any child born has the food, shelter, clothing, and education that that child needs. The pro-life position is about supporting women who do have abortions with mental and physical health care. It is about educating kids and adolescents about sex and freely giving out all the contraception they need without shame or embarrassment. So to conclude, yes, I'm pro-life. I'm against the death penalty. I'm against war with some very limited exceptions. I'm pro letting a woman have autonomy over herself. Or how about, let's say, pro recognizing that women do have autonomy over themselves. Unless anyone think that I, as a man, think that this me is allowing a woman to have autonomy over herself, it's quite the opposite. This is me saying I have no right to interfere with a woman having complete autonomy over herself. Yes, that is pro-life. I get it, Steve. I do. And thank you. And so yesterday, as I heard people say, I'm pro-life, and particularly I'm deeply motivated by my Christian faith, another thing occurred to me. You know, you give me a night off to go and think about things. Things happen. Do you realize that the wealthy white cisgender heterosexual men who put this government together? I remember how Abigail Adams wrote to her husband, her obnoxious husband John. Abigail was the brains of the outfit, by the way, and said, don't forget the women, John. And then John promptly forgot the women, and there was not a goddamn word said in the Constitution about women. How about that? Pretty much the Declaration of Independence, too. But the wealthy, cisgendered, heterosexual, white males who put together the form of this government and who, by virtue of their wealth, were not the hammering and banging and whatever away trying to earn enough gruel for an evening sustenance. One of the things that they were extremely committed to was the idea that religion is not the business of government. That every person's religion or faith should be something entirely personal and left to themselves, and that it would be wrong, and that a government so constituted would be wrong for government to endorse or establish a state religion or any kind of favoritism over one faith of another. And so when I heard those people say, I have Christian values, I thought, wait a minute. It is foundational to the Constitution of the United States that there shall be no religious test for the holding of office. Because they were much closer in time to an England in which, by God, there were religious tests for the holding of office. You couldn't be a Quaker and be in the Parliament. You couldn't be a Catholic and be in the Parliament. You couldn't be a Puritan and be in the Parliament. You could be a member of the King's Own Church of England. Then you could be in the Parliament. There was literally a religious test for the holding of office. And so, when these good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual, Christian Republicans come burbling and babbling and blathering and braying and grunting and hooting about how Christian they are, here's that phrase I mentioned earlier, we should have the courage to tell them that they are being un-American. Because it is foundationally un-American to beat on your religion as a means of trying to gin up a vote. Of saying to the voters, vote for me because I'm not one of them. When in fact, if we had a government similar to the government that started this country, filled with what are called deists, which we would call agnostics today, religious faith would be far safer because no one would be trying to advance one religious faith over another. Because when one of these Republicans says, vote for me because I'm a Christian, what they're actually saying is, don't vote for that Jew over there, that Jew. Don't vote for that Muslim. Don't vote for that atheist. Don't vote for that agnostic. Don't vote for that Hindu. Don't vote for that Sikh. Don't vote for that Buddhist. Don't vote for that Jain. Don't vote for that indigenous American with their animistic faith. I will govern so as to make Christianity the dominant established religion of the United States of America. Or of whatever district or state or county, municipality, ward, village, township that they're running for. It is un-American to do that. And wouldn't it be nice if we had the courage to say that? I only had 3 minutes last night. Didn't quite have time to work that in. Given a little more time, by God, I would. Because I think it's actually important. Desperately so. Because we draw a little nearer every day to theocracy. And it's always the most obnoxious, hate-filled individuals who go about braying about their religion. You know, I would trust a Buddhist over an evangelical Christian any day, just because of the nature of Buddhism. I am irreligious, but I'm also a jealous defender of the First Amendment. So, you know, I sit around thinking about these things, because I think it's not mere parlor talk. For instance, look, because I was corresponding with Flavio earlier today. Look at the people who are going hammer and tongs, trying to keep other Americans from voting. They ain't atheists. They're not agnostics. They're not Buddhists, Hindus, Shinto, Jain. They're evangelical Christians. Which in its own right tells you that they are no Christians at all. Because even Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer and semi-literate itinerant rabbi who wore a dress every day of their life, said, "Render unto Caesar that which is Caesar's, and unto God that which is God's." That's kind of that's a slightly different way of saying there should be a separation between church and state. You know, Paul comes along and invents Christianity and says, "Hey, slaves, obey your masters as we obey Christ." That was because he was trying to stay on Nero's good side, and how did that work out? So all of these things come together because these questions mean something to me. And the fact of the matter is, the guy who is the incumbent for the seat that I'm seeking nothing would make him happier than if he could compel everyone in the world to follow the dictates of his bizarre, cultish fantasies. That is not a critique of Christianity. That is a critique of a man who is not a Christian, but calls himself one. Because you can't go around beating on the least of these, because then you're going around beating on Jesus, because that's what Jesus said, right? But he does. And the rest of us are, frankly, non-people, not deserving of the protection of law and government. Yeah, thank you, Jack. I know White Rose is still playing its orchestral music. That's because I'm having problems getting through to the server, and I'm hoping to hear from Ben and get that all sorted out and get that going, too. And the business with the encoder screwing up the length of the program, I may have found that. I'm not entirely sure, but I made a modification, and maybe by the end of the program we'll get it. We'll see it return to its regular length, because it's screwing up players. People's, you know, media players, and the podcast won't play correctly because things, you know, the program's 2,000 hours long. Ugh. But if not, over the weekend I will change players, and hopefully that will sort out the problem. We've used the same interface for nearly two decades, and maybe it's just time for a change. Brother Deacon Asa taking issue with me saying I would trust a Buddhist over an evangelical Christian. Really? Trust Buddhists more than religious maniacs from any other religion? Like Buddhists have not been genociding Rohingya Muslims since 2017 to this day? Yeah, that's of course, that's taking place in Myanmar. And I guess they're leveraging Buddhism. But generally speaking, you know, Buddhists will say, hey, kill the Buddha. You know, generally speaking, when I think of Buddhism, I think of the Dalai Lama's Buddhism. I think of Zen Buddhism, which is much closer to just an existential philosophy. Look at the toxic government, the bigoted government of Narendra Modi in India. You won't eat a steak, but you'll kill your neighbor? Because I remember years and years ago when a bunch of fundamentalist Hindus went wild and burned down a Jain sanctuary or three or five or whatever in India. People can be motivated to do just about any evil thing under the sun. Sometimes religion is used to leverage that. Oh, and Steve in New York wanted me to reiterate the Laurel's Butter Challenge. For anybody who kicks in $200, Steve will send them a collection of Laurel's Butters, laurelsbutter.com. They are delicious. And he'll send you, 20 jars for $200 and 12 jars for 150, something like that. Help me, Steve. I'm sorry. I don't have your original offer right here in front of me. But it's a really generous offer. And by the way, Kat, I hope you're enjoying your coffee. Let us know and tell us if it's as good as Steve and Scott say it is. My abortion opinion, Lee in New York, says, I never had and never will be pregnant, yet I have an opinion. Here it is. Medical decisions should be made by patient and doctor. No legislators allowed. Legislators should require that the people giving care should be skilled and facilities should be safe and such. It's so much easier than all the misogynistic hoop jumping one has to go through and the self-hating that an anti-abortion woman has to engage in, isn't it? Thanks. Thanks, Lee. Jack says, abortion viewpoint framing. As I was listening to interviews on Nicole Wallace's show earlier, I had a thought on the framing of the state laws related to abortion that were being discussed. One Republican legislator they showed in a clip had absolutely nothing in her comments about the rights or welfare of the very young pregnant woman that was in her speech. I thought of a phrase from corporate language I've read about many times, that it is responsibility without authority. The pregnant person has all the responsibility and no authority or power in so many of the cases these extremists want their laws to apply to. Depending on the facts of the case, on how the pregnancy began, and the specific laws that applied to the case, the pregnant person could have anywhere from 100% responsibility and 0% authority in how to proceed to somewhere within those extremes. Right-wing Republicans know all about avoiding responsibility for causing harm, even when they have to pass laws to specifically avoid it. But when it's on the other foot, they don't have a clue. I know, Jack, and that's a solid observation. Thank you for that. Flavio says, separation of church and state. When I was an exchange student in France, my friend Didier showed me that famous photo of Jimmy Swaggart bawling on television and said, "This is America." Or maybe it was Cet America. Sorry for the bad French accent. Europeans, and especially staunchly Republican small-R French Europeans, are horrified when politicians in the U.S., from the president on down, always obligatorily give a benediction as though they were the Pope. God bless this and God bless that. I find it disgusting, too. God, there's that great scene in Little Big Man. That's our first movie reference for the evening. The great scene in Little Big Man when young Jack Crabb is on the battlefield. cavalry's mowing down indigenous people. And he's standing there and says, God bless my mother. God bless my father. God bless George Washington. What kind of damn fool Indian says something like that? And keeps from being killed. So, and there's the picture of Jimmy Swaggart. I have sinned against you. Oh, I remember. Yeah, it was a great racket. Oh, what's that, Jerry Jr.?
Becky! Hot wife!
My religion rant, Scott in San Diego, says, for thousands of years, there's been a propaganda campaign that people are flawed, that we're the problem, and that religion is the solution. Pick your poison, Judeo-Christian, Islam. You know, let's not do Judeo-Christian, because that's something Christians invented to make themselves feel better about appropriating the Jews' book. Judaism, Christianity, Islam, Buddhism, and Hinduism, it makes no real difference. It's all about the dynamic of controlling humanity via fear and social engineering. These belief systems have helped bring on about more havoc, division, death, and destruction than they've ever prevented. Thankfully, they're gasping their collective last breaths. This is especially welcome news for America. From 2001 to 2009, much of our government was run by a mob of religious Armageddonist whack jobs, delusional, paranoid, and psychotic people whose every move was influenced by their imagined, invisible, angry old man in the sky. It's all just such a bunch of superstitious bullshit. The sooner people realize the true destructive, manipulative nature of religions, the better off we'll all be. And the thing is, it's so deeply ingrained in the culture, Scott. I mean, I was dipped by the heel in the stuff as a child. But much like the Darmok and Jalad at Tanagra episode of Star Trek Next Generation, we speak in these metaphors. We speak in the language. Never forget that the power of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. came from his knowledge of Scripture and his ability to speak to people's hearts through the language of that upon which they had been brought up to believe was the difference maker in whether they had a happy afterlife or a particularly toasty one that involved pineapples. So there is that. And sometimes it's beneficial. I mean, it's like, you know, if you've done it unto the least of these, you've done it also unto me. You can really, really just thump some Republicans with that. And it stings when it lands. Will we ever get an atheist president? Flavio says, and will that atheist president also have to give a benediction asking for a friend? Well, I mean, I would like to reframe your question, Flavio. Will we ever get another atheist president? There's pretty solid evidence that Abraham Lincoln was not a religious man. And the same goes for most of the early presidents. George Washington was a Freemason, and membership in the Masonic Lodge is predicated on belief in God, but not in any particular religion. Thomas Jefferson, the somewhat wealthy white guy with the thin, reedy voice. I like to think of him sounding a little like this. Or maybe like Michael Jackson. Enslaver of people. Well, he wrote a version of the New Testament where he took out all the magic and witchcraft and left only the existential sort of life lessons. Also brought into the country the very first copy of the Quran. It may fairly be said that in modern language, we would use the word atheist or agnostic to describe him, Monroe, Madison. Jackson wasn't a big one for Jesus, and he tended to say things like, by the eternal. Of course, he also put out bounties on enslaved people who had run away from him, told anyone who captured the person that they could lay on 30 of the best for an extra $20 or something. And, of course, committed a genocide against indigenous Americans. So the question is another, not and, but another, Flavio. Erwin has a question about the horn end. Says, I'm still behind the curve on my finances 5 years after divorce and alcoholism recovery. I would love to join your group, but haven't the resources to do so. I'm not working, living on a partial civil service retirement and Social Security and with Medicare. Comfortable in my living at this point, still paying off credit card debt from raising two children and my past lousy financial ability. Best of luck for your primary, and I'm listening to you at my community garden spot, getting my exercise and hopefully a better garden this year, Erwin, in Missoula. Erwin, all the best, my friend. And I want to tell you how inspiring it is to everybody in the community, the way that you have not given up, the strength that you have displayed, not giving in, constantly working to make yourself better. And you talk about paying credit card debt from raising two kids. Well, it reminds me of something I saw earlier today. Frau Ingram. Laura Ingram was pissing and moaning about the idea of forgiving student loan debt and said, my mother worked waited tables into her 70s to help us pay for college. Some of these right-wingers are truly clueless. I mean, that was a self-own of gargantuan proportions, bragging that to have student debt forgiven for other students would somehow devalue the fact that she rode her mama's back into her 70s so she could get a law degree from Dartmouth. You do you, Laura. Oh, Lord. Jude says, each Saturday, the Boots and Flowers will be president at Bremerton High School, where the athletic coach was relieved of his position because he refused to cease his open prayer during training and games with the students. 2 p.m. if there are any in the community who would be open to join us for that hour in spirit. Peace. Women standing. P.S. Welcome back, sister. Thank you, Jude. Happy to be back. Didn't like being away, but these things are necessary and helpful. And I hope help contribute to a better West Virginia when I'm gone, because I don't just frivolously take time off. Kind of need a vacation. Because remember, I even, with the exception of the 5 days I was in the hospital and a couple of days afterward, I found a way to get on the air, even when I was in considerable pain, recovering from surgery. I'm still here. Still there, Birmingham. And that is that's a fascinating case. There are arguments being, we will have some sort of a resolution by the six Federalist Society judicial punks and thugs. It's probably not going to be a result that will be good for the Constitution or for America. Football coach out at Bremerton High School. I'm pretty sure I know a guy who graduated from Bremerton High School. Probably didn't have this guy for coach. But he would bray and grunt his prayers into the universe and kind of made the kid, you know, you don't, you, well, the children were free to, the students were free to walk away. Not if they wanted to start next Friday night's game, they weren't. And then, of course, that gets them singled out. What's the matter with you? Don't you love Jesus? Because there's a big, 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 big Jesus cult inside high school athletics. Ugh. And the Bremerton School District was absolutely correct in its decision to sack this guy because, frankly, he was insubordinate. They violated my religious rights. Dude, spend less time banging your Bible and a little more time reading it. Go find where Jesus says, don't be like the Pharisees praying and braying loudly in the streets. You got something you need to say to your Father which is in heaven? Get in the closet. That's right. Jesus told people to go in the closet and say it and get on with your life. Kind of makes sense, doesn't it? Yeah, it does. Steve in New York says, Laura Ingram's mom, I wish her mom did not have to work into her 70s, had been able to better enjoy her later years, but I'm a liberal that way. Yeah, I know. Too bad Laura Ingram didn't pursue a more honest living. And Scott wants to know, was the Thomas Jefferson cut and paste Bible ever published? If so, I'd like a copy. I don't know. You know where the best place to look would be, Scott? Library of Congress, because they, it's a massive collection. You know how many buildings there are, Scott. There's a lot of stuff that has been digitized in the Library of Congress, and as a public institution, I think almost all of it is free or nearly free. So that would be my first thought. Oh, and by the way, I love it. I love it when, even without putting on my tattered purple robe with the frayed appliqued moons and stars on it and Will Thee Kiss Me in the Dark Baby written in glow-in-the-dark ink, I managed to get out in front of the zeitgeist, and we're so far out in front of the curve that we think we're on straight road. You may recall me saying something recently along the lines of, well, of course, Clanny Oakley, Lauren Bobblehead Boobert, had to say something about whatever it was, because Perjury Trailer Queen, Q-Ball, has been getting all the attention lately, and Lauren Bobblehead Boobert, Clanny Oakley, can't stand it when that happens. And so, lo and behold, imagine my delight when I opened a story today from Olivia Beavers over at Politico, who reports in a story called Inside the House Freedom Caucus's Identity Crisis. The conservatives who built their political brand on challenging GOP leaders are starting to struggle with problems of their own. Oh, good. I hope it doesn't hurt too little. And one of the things that Ms. Beavers reports is that the dipshit twins, Perjury Trailer Queen, Q-Ball, and Lauren Bobblehead Boobert, Clanny Oakley, well, they're mean-girling each other. And it's gotten to the point that Clanny Oakley gets a sad every time that she's mentioned in the same breath as Perjury Trailer Queen. It got so bad, the squabbling and catfighting,
saucer of milk for table two. Meow. Meow, meow. That, while I love this quote. Marjorie Taylor Greene and Lauren Boebert look from the outside like MAGA twins, both loathed by Democrats for their incendiary right-wing rhetoric, but inside the House GOP, they're not quite buddy-buddy. Part of it started when Clanny Oakley joined alongside some of her GOP colleagues in being shocked, disgusted when Perjury Trailer Queen went and palled around with white supremacists. So they got together, the House Freedom Caucus Board of Directors got together a few blocks from the Capitol, and they, the dipshit twins put the claws out and went after each other over, Perjury Trailer Queen's appearance at that white nationalist conference. And in the article by Ms. Beavers, she writes, "Their confrontation grew so heated that at least one onlooker feared the Green-Boebert back and forth might escalate beyond the verbal cage match had another member not stepped in to de-escalate. The incident was confirmed by three people connected to the Freedom Caucus, the Freedom Caucus, whose members largely avoided public criticism of Green and Representative Paul Gosar, the demon dentist of the desert, at the time, and focused their discontent on event organizer Nick Fuentes." I wish somebody had not stepped in. And Ms. Beavers writes, "The run-in between Green and Boebert is a microcosm of a bigger identity crisis that's starting to take hold within the Freedom Caucus. The Freedom Carcass. A group founded with right-leaning policy ambition that later became a Donald Trump defense team is starting to split in important ways from how to respond to this week's Kevin McCarthy tapes." I love the fact that there's this week's Kevin McCarthy tapes. That means that there was last week's Kevin McCarthy tapes and hopefully next week's Kevin McCarthy tapes. To more fundamentally, whether to reorient itself back to its limited government, small government roots. Representative Scott Desjarlais, a maggot from Tennistan, who is very much pro-life and continues to be reelected, even though it is a known fact that he paid for, I think, more than one abortion for a woman or women whom he impregnated, but did not want to see the fruit of his loins see the light of day. The laws are for thee and not for me. And so it's probably too much to hope that they will just completely fall to pieces. But it is nice to know that they're sort of shredding themselves. And the founding members of the Freedom Caucus were John Fleming of Louisiana Stan, Matt Salmon of Arizona Stan, Mark Meadows, the preacher, the lion preacher from North Carolina Stan, Jim Jacketoff Jordan from Ohio Stan, and back when he was in the Congress, Ron, soon to be monkey up DeClantis, from Florida Stan, Mick Mulvaney, who was a member of Congress from South Carolina Stan, Scott Garrett from New Jersey, and Raul Labrador. That sounds like a character from a Dave Barry novel. And Justin Amash from Michigan. And then, of course, along came the dipshit twins and the demon dentist from the desert and so forth. Boebert and Green, Matt in San Francisco writes, "Makes me yearn for the return of duels at dawn." hissing and spitting at 10 paces. And both Steve and Irwin wrote in to answer Scott and San Diego's question. Irwin said, I have a hard copy of Jefferson's edited Bible. It's available. It's very thin. Try ABE Books Online. And Stephen New York said, I have a copy. So, yeah, it's published. It's not long because he only edited the Gospels, and it may have just been the Synoptics. It's less than 100 pages, as I recall. Well, that would be yeah, because everything else is, you know, not Jesus. So, oh, goodness me. I have filler obstered into 11 minutes into the front porch. Let's get that started. See what people want to talk about this evening. Because God knows there's plenty. And by the way, if you'd like to be part of the front porch conversation, feel free to use the button at headon.live. It'll carry you over the river and through the woods to the old holler tree we sublet from the Keebler Elves and around which we join every Friday afternoon. And I hope we will have a rousing good chat this evening. Let's give it a second for all the connecting to take place. Why won't it? There we go. Let's check in and you there, Sparky?
Yeah, I'm here.
Hey, happy Friday.
It is?
It is. Last I checked, it's Friday.
Oh, that's right.
Any big doings today? Or over the weekend?
I'm going out to lunch tomorrow with Mary.
Oh, good. Any place special?
Sunday last night. We're going to Mexican.
Oh, yummy.
And then she's coming to my house, and we're going to go through some boxes. I have no clue what's in them. Told her we're going to be on a treasure hunt.
Like, how long has it been since you have been in these boxes?
I've never been in the boxes, but they were packed 11 years ago.
Oh, my. Well, you know, she's just, in your profile pic, she's just cute as a button.
Yeah, did you see the picture of her house from the other side of the lake I posted?
Yeah, that's a nice little bungalow.
Roger's going, Jesus, what you do with all that solar?
Power half a Redding with that.
Well, it was on the house when she bought it. She just had to take over the lease for the solar panels. She has zero power bill.
Oh, how nice that is.
But the house has a 400-amp service on it. I was checking it out last time I was up there.
Because I'm not particularly electrically oriented, how is that relative to, like, regular household service?
Well, it's not regular. Most houses have 200-amp services on them.
Okay, that's what I thought. Yeah, I've got 200-amp legs coming into the breaker box.
She has, two air conditioning units on the house.
How many square feet is that? That's is that mansion?
Quite. I don't know. It's only got two bedrooms, but it's got a den, massive kitchen area, dining, and living room is all one room.
Well, it's a pretty house, and I love the setting on the lake. Is that lake natural or man-made?
Man-made.
So it's a reservoir for somebody?
They probably get their water out of there for a because you go up the top of the hill, and there's the water treatment plants on the top of the hill. And then you look off her deck, and there's a big old giant pipe that comes out underneath her house. I don't know what it does, and it goes into the lake.
Hmm. It wouldn't, you wouldn't think it would be gray water discharge, would you?
No, it's, don't know what it is. Maybe it's just storm water.
Well, that could be, yeah, like from a culvert.
Yeah. Because the whole place has underground utilities, the whole gated community. It's a big area. I don't know how many houses are in there.
So, lunch tomorrow?
Last weekend, the beer can chicken.
How did that turn out?
I didn't keep a great eye on it like I should have. I was too interested in something else.
So
we were kind of mourning that the Warriors didn't win last Sunday. They won on Wednesday night, though.
Yeah, I mean, you wanted it to happen on Sunday, then. Yeah.
Yeah. And the two TV thing worked out, but it was kind of distracting. Trying to watch the race and the basketball game at the same time.
Well, you know, they're not. They don't exactly go at the same speeds, do they?
No, they don't. Not when you're watching Talladega. Shit happens fast there. You look at the basketball game for a minute, and all of a sudden you turn around, there's a big old wreck already happened at Talladega.
Well, let's see. Who all do we have in the group this evening?
The usual suspects.
Yeah. I see Christopher there. Christopher, Sparky mentioned the basketball. I guess that was not good for you.
No, the Bulls did what everyone expected them to do. They pulled out one game. That's great. Something to build on for next year. The champs took them out pretty nice and quietly. Excuse me. But, yeah, I mean, the games last night were terrific. I mean, most of the games have been really, really good. It's been a pretty solid playoffs, and this next second round coming up in the East, basically any of the four teams remaining can win.
Oh, yeah.
You could probably say the same thing about the West, too. I don't know if Dallas really has a shot. I don't think so. I think, really, that's Warriors. That's going to be Warriors Suns. Be a great series. It's going to be a phenomenal rest of the.
Yeah, I mean Phoenix is not shabby.
They're a solid team. They're the best team all year, and you know everybody's rooting for Chris Paul to get a ring.
They lost their star player.
Booker's back.
Oh, he is. I thought he
Booker
was out.
Played last night. He's back. He's going to be fine. Paul, age, old man time is starting to catch up with him a little bit, though. I don't know if they're going to be able to get like 35, 40 minutes out of him when they really need it going up against the Warriors. I don't know about that. We'll see. But, yeah, it should be phenomenal. And then, you know, Harden, too. A lot of people don't like Harden. But, you know, I'm kind of rooting for him, too. He's been a guy without a ring in all his career, too. So I wouldn't be upset if either one of those guys ended up with the ring. And I'll shut up about the sports ball. I'm getting ready to, in a little bit, I'm going to go butterfly. We talked about this before, Robin. You've done this, right, where you've triple butterflied a pork loin?
Oh, yeah, that's going to be on the menu for the Horn Inn.
There you go. All right. So, yeah, I think I know how to do it. And I think we talked about it on Friday in the Front Porch before, too. So what do you like to put in the middle? What do you like to stuff it with?
Oh, golly, there's so many things. Okay, just to go over it again, Christopher, you want to have your chef's knife or your butcher knife, you know, like a razor.
Yeah.
And you want to work.
It's gonna be a big freaking disaster, right? Unless it's super sharp.
Well, yeah, and you know that there's no greater guarantee for hurting yourself than a dull knife. More people have been cut with dull knives than with sharp ones. And since you're working with something the size of a whole pork loin, you want to make sure that it's passing. You know, it's tender, but you want to make sure it's passing nicely and uniformly through. And the important thing is that you leave enough at the back that you can fold it over.
Yes. Okay.
And you know, just try to eyeball thirds through the thickness of the pork loin. So when you get that first flap folded over, then come back like a quarter inch and make your incision. And cut back towards you, and again, make sure you leave plenty of, you know, not plenty, but enough so that it won't fall apart and won't split. So
right.
then you, happy
balance, right? Yeah, that happy medium.
Yeah. So then you've got it laid out in a trifold.
Mm-hmm.
And as for what you can put in it, I've done a bunch of different stuff. One of my favorites is fresh, not canned or pickled, but fresh slices of jalapeno and cilantro. But, you know, then there's the cilantro controversy.
We talked about that, too.
Yeah. But the buffalo mozzarella, they make it now that it's pre-sliced.
I like that.
Little rounds. So lay the buffalo mozzarella down and lay down if not cilantro, you know, you can choose some other aromatic herb. Dill's not parsley. Tarragon's not bad. You know, whatever aromatic herb you like.
I've got a ton of sprigs of rosemary, fresh rosemary.
Yeah. And then fold it over and then put down chunks of fresh pineapple. And then fold that top over it. And if you can get like a heavy needle and butcher's twine, sew it up all the way around the end, from end to end. And put it on in foil.
In foil.
Yeah, over, you know, like 200, 225. And it'll cook pretty quickly that way. And then at the end, the other thing you can do, you can put it on without the foil first, because then you get some really pretty charring and grill marks. Right. And then after you've done that, wrap it up, and it'll, you know, within make it tight in the foil, and it'll be delicious. And then when you go to take it out of the foil, make sure you unwrap it very carefully so that you can preserve those beautiful juices, and you'll probably have some runoff from the melted cheese. But, oh, heavenly days, it'll be good. The other thing I love to do is any kind of dried fruit.
You know what? I've got these I don't know what to do with them because I bought them on a whim at the checkout. I had, like, a coupon, and I needed, like, $4 more for the coupon. Use the coupon. So I got these mango chili dried mangoes. Chili spiced.
Ooh.
Dried mangoes. Do you think that would be good inside there?
I'm a little sketchy about the chili flavoring. I'm sure dried mango would be good.
Maybe I could wash that off.
Or well, yeah. But you don't necessarily want to rehydrate the mangoes because you want the pork juices to do that work for you.
Yes, right. Let me think about that.
What I was about to say, I love one of the combinations I did was dried cherries.
Okay.
And you know that Kerrygold Dubliner cheese?
Yes.
I've done apricots, dried apricots, and dried apricots and Havarti.
That sounds terrific.
I did dried apples and pears, and dill Havarti.
We're making everybody hungry, Robin.
Oh, I know. Well, considering the times it's been done to me, fair is fair. but when you go to slice it, you know, like I said, you've taken care to make sure that you preserve the drippings and the juices and everything. Get rid of all the butcher's twine, and you know, do it in slices, and try to lay it, against a. Like a spatula of some sort, so that it doesn't all fall apart, and then plate it from there, and then use some of the pan juices over the top. And
let me ask you this: I was flipping through recipes online, and I have seen bacon wrapped. Would you recommend that? Have you ever tried it?
It's not a bad idea, and I'll bet your brother Deacon Ace has done it. What you would probably want to do is learn how to weave one of those bacon mats.
Oh, yeah.
And do it that way. But the problem is, if the heat of your grill gets out of hand at all, the bacon is just going to turn hard. But it is, I mean, even if you have to throw it away, it is good for keeping... for keeping the loin moist, because there's not a lot of fat on a pork loin. That's why I recommend the foil, keeps it moist. But if you were to be doing it in an oven and you wanted to get the smoke flavor from the bacon that way, that would be brilliant.
But if you're using
your grill, you're going to be using some hickory chips or something like that anyway. The bacon would almost be superfluous.
Okay.
And bacon ain't cheap these days.
Man, I'm telling you, ground beef. I was gonna have taco night, and I said, "No taco night tonight."
Well, see, I was trying to source, because I'm trying to be responsible and get everything in line for the horn end, and I called my guy, Steve in Georgia, Steve from Georgia Stand, call the guy instead of going, in West Virginia, when you poach cattle, they're called slow elk. Joke, but I asked him, could he get me a box of briskets? And he said, he can't even get them from the warehouse. They've been delisted.
Oh my God!
Because if you can, I'm not talking about those little scrawny ass things you get at, like St. Patty's Day, that come in the brine with the little packet. An entire beef brisket is probably north of $100 now.
Oh my God!
And the thing is, I buy them untrimmed, just the whole brisket, with all the fat on it. A, because I want that fat, because it's gonna make my brisket, smoked brisket, tender and sweet. But also because, it's like some sort of inverse proportion. The more trimming a piece of meat has been subjected to, the higher the rate goes up per pound. Baby back ribs are more expensive than St. Louis style ribs. And St. Louis-style ribs are more expensive than country-style ribs. And it's all the difference is how much trimming you're doing, how much work you're doing at home. And if you know what you're doing, why would you throw that money away?
Right.
And so of all the forms of brisket, the untrimmed whole brisket is the least expensive variety. And even that's going to be north of $100 for the whole thing. And it's kind of breathtaking.
Yeah.
So I asked my guy if he had whole sirloin tip roasts. Because those things hickory smoke beautifully, too. And if you put your meat thermometer in and you pull that bad boy when it gets to 120, and then you'll have still have carryover cooking, you get some of the most beautiful. And, you know, you get it. You get a part of it that's well done. There's a part that's rare and all other gradations in between. And all the flavor on a really good, crispy, flaky, you know, good quality like hoagie roll. It's the best steak sandwich you've ever had in your life. It's not like a Philly steak. It is a legitimate steak sandwich. Serve it up with lettuce and tomato slices and some kind of cheese and, you know, God knows, salt and pepper and horseradish sauce.
God, that sounds amazing.
So, you know, pulled pork.
Now we got Todd going.
Oh, yeah, Todd's probably suffering somewhere. Pulled pork, some kind of beef, the trifold pork loin, do some smoked chicken and just chop it up for pulled chicken sandwiches, biscuits and dirty gravy, the blue cheese biscuits that I did in the, last year for Pride, and the... Put the fried fish, the catfish fillets on it with the homemade tartar sauce. Nobody's going to go hungry at this thing.
Oh, man. Sounds amazing.
And
sounds
back when amazing. Yeah, back when I did the Malloy Mountain Getaway summer, how many summers ago was that? Jude might recall. I did a vegan curry that got wiped out faster than the barbecue did. And, several people said it was absolutely delicious. And I didn't think it was too shabby myself. But there
sounds absolutely amazing, Robin.
I even went so far as to have... I burned off the griddle, made sure there was nothing. I used an entirely separate set of tools that had never touched meat. And it was well received.
I think I told you my story about Thanksgiving once with some vegans who were friends of my cousins, right? Did I tell you that story about
No,
the
I don't think so. No, no.
I didn't know that Worcestershire sauce contained anchovies. So I marinated the damn asparagus wrapped with green onion, scallions, and I was so proud of myself because they looked like gorgeous little bundles, right? And they grilled up so pretty, and they were perfect. And I bring them, and I put them out there, and the vegan couple says, let me ask you this. Did you marinate in Worcestershire sauce? Yeah, I used a little bit of Worcestershire sauce. They said, no, we can't eat that. That's got anchovies. I'm like, oh, my God. And I looked in the bottle when I got home. Oh, yeah. How about that?
Yeah, well, and you know, for future reference, there's probably vegan Worcestershire sauce now. Now, I'll tell you something.
There probably is.
Now, I love the Annie's. I was gifted by a friend of the community with some Annie's organic Worcestershire sauce. It's actually thicker than like Lee and Perrin's, but wow, does it pack a flavor wallop.
Annie's mm-hmm. Annie's does good work.
Yeah,
good work, right?
Yeah, and I can't remember. I think it's back when he was doing No Reservations, Tony Bourdain. There's an episode, and I'll bet you if Flavio's listening, he knows. There's an episode where he goes to Portugal. And he goes to some outdoor party where they do, I think it's roasted leeks. And it's very...
I love leeks.
Yeah, it's very al fresco, and I recall there being some sort of... methodology to it. I think there was newspaper involved or something. I can't remember. But the upshot of it was you got a big old bite of the roasted leek, and then somebody held up the wineskin and squirted your mouth full of red wine.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And I'm going to there are people here who do wonderful things with ramps. And I'm going to try to have some of that on hand.
You talked about ramps. I remember you talking about spring and talking about ramp season. And for the life of me, I think I probably have had them in a dish somewhere. But I don't know.
If they didn't knock you down, they weren't ramps, because there's almost no way to use them judiciously. It's interesting, though, when I went, and this was years ago now, I want to go back so badly. When I was in northern Wisconsin, they love them there, too. Only I guess the language didn't quite make the trip, and they just call them wild onions. But they're so much more than that, because they're like a cross between an onion and garlic and a leek.
Huh.
And they will knock your socks off. You can even buy ramp wine here in West Virginia. And it's not for drinking. But my God, if you fried pork chops or you know, chicken breast or something like that, to deglaze the pan with that ramp wine adds just a flavor you can't even begin to describe.
Cats, like hundreds of thousands of years ago, all those root vegetables had some massive sex orgy, and out came the ramps.
Yeah, and the reason they're ramps, Christopher, is it's a shortened mispronunciation of the Welsh Celtic word for garlic. Ramsey. And a field of garlic is, I think, Ramsey. And so this this area was colonized by some people whose last name was Ramsey. Same word.
Ramsey. Just like Ramsey from the Game of Thrones. Yeah. I'm sure that the character was based upon that same Ramsey, right?
Probably. I think it's my great grandmother. Her name was Ella Jane Ramsey before she became a Kincaid. And my mother was born at a little place on the side of the road called Ramsey. Yes, Scott?
I have a question about Annie's. Is this the same Annie's that has like canned soups and different things?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Annie's Organic.
Before time went away and we had the current time, and I started ordering groceries to be delivered, the soup that I wanted was like a split pea sort of soup, and they didn't have it, and they gave me a second choice, and it was Annie's. I had seen Annie's in the store, but never tried it. There's a lentil soup, lentil vegetable soup with a curry flavor to it.
Ooh.
My God. I had never tasted canned soup that was that freaking good.
What was that soup you ordered a couple of months back?
Oh, the Navy, the Senate.
Never did report back on it.
Oh, my Lord. It was wonderful. I was toying with the idea of ordering another. They only sell it by the case, which is like a dozen cans. And it works out to like $5 a can, which, for a good quality soup, I don't suppose that's too outrageous. But, oh, man, I just reveled in that. I had it once a week, so I could kind of stretch it out. It was wonderful.
So you shot through all of it now?
Oh, it's all gone. It's all a part of me at this point. I want to go back to sports, if I may.
Okay.
And I, you do? Scott?
What do you know about sports?
I don't normally do it, but when this Coach Thumper up in Washington State was first hitting the news, there was some file footage of him it was like a classroom with a blackboard and all the players in there. The diagrammed plays on his chalkboard were incredible. Instead of the usual X's and O's, there were crosses and rolled away empty tombstones. And it was just magnificent. It was, I almost heard an angelic choir.
Is this along the lines of the way that Billable Rick punked me a week or so ago about the cast member from Jackass being the person who got clocked by Mike Tyson?
No, this is not. This is totally strictly from my imagination.
Yeah, no, no, that's what I'm saying. Yeah.
That, Robin, that wasn't a joke. It was a cast from Jack member that Mike Tyson punched on.
No, yeah. Billable Rick said it wasn't.
No, I
it definitely was. He's a cast member from Jackass Forever. Billable's wrong. It was a stunt.
All right, now I'm now I'm down the rabbit hole, thoroughly gaslit, and don't know who to believe.
Well, surely you have a recipe for a rabbit.
Don't call me Shirley.
Oh. Beat me to it. No, I don't, and don't call me Shirley. It's not, not so it is not nice to gaslight your humble hostess.
So what is the final disposition of the coach, Coach Thumper, as I call him? Is he gone?
Well, they fired him, and then he's suing.
So, and that's what the Supreme Court is hearing?
Yeah, it's going all the way to the Supreme Court, and I'm sure Amy COVID Barrett and Brett Kavanaugh are going to find that he has deeply held religious beliefs that allow him to shit on everybody in the whole wide world in the name of Jesus.
Well, in certain states, I think of Texas as an example, Friday night football is like a religious thing. It's like going to temple, but with cleats and pads and helmets and
peanuts,
popcorn.
Lord bless these young gladiators as in the name of Jesus. By the way, back when we were talking about pork loins, Steve in New York wanted to know what kind of pears. It just says dried pears. They're probably Bartlett's. Oh, and Tom and Sunny San Rafael, thanks for the heads up. This is good to know. Annie's, unfortunately, has some labor issues in the news a lot recently. Via SF Eater San Francisco. Workers for frozen food giant Amy's Kitchen allege unsafe conditions at Bay Area factory. Formal complaint, California Division of Occupational Safety and Health. Workers who have not been given access to the bathroom or drinking water during shifts at a Santa Rosa production facility for Amy's Kitchen. Complaint comes on the heels of an NBC News investigation during which several employees shared stories of being told to continue wrapping burritos and filling frozen meal plates despite suffering painful injuries caused by repetitive motions. Cecilia Luna Ojeda, who filed the complaint on behalf of all workers at the plant, told NBC News she was laid off after she told the company she needed surgery to address an injury that began when she was working on the company's frozen burrito production line. Jesus. Really? Yeah, really.
After Robin, ungaslight you, I looked into it. I think it probably wasn't a cast member currently. What happened was Mike Tyson punched Steve-O in the past and broke his nose on live TV. So I think Rick is right. I apologize.
Okay, thank you.
Someone associate this guy with Steve-O because they have the same kind of voice and annoying personality. That's all it is.
Ah, okay. Okay. That helps.
Well, once they get their labor issues sorted out, try some of that lentil soup. You'll thank me later.
Their mac and cheese is
well, and this, and this is problems with their frozen food line, which might not be the same thing as their canned goods line. Might be a different, the problem is it's all the same company.
Yeah,
and it's it's
are we sure that Annie's and Amy's are the same company? Because the vegan Worcestershire sauce.
Oh wait, that's Amy's. Annie's is what I was saying. Good catch, Roger. Because this is Amy's.
Well, which makes the Worcestershire?
Annie's.
Okay. So yeah, you said Amy's, and that was why I thought maybe.
Yeah. Well, okay. Y'all talk amongst yourselves. I'm gonna have to ungaslight myself on this too. I'll be right back. I'm gonna go get the Worcestershire sauce.
Okay.
The things you do to me.
Well, this
I have no idea about any labor problems at any of these outfits that start with an A. But when I heard that Annie's and Amy's slight difference there, I just had to try to find it. And my quick search is all Amy's, even though I asked for labor problems at Annie's. It just didn't it didn't jive, and that's why I brought it up.
Well, now, I thought maybe it was a division of Amy's or Annie's. Or
I don't have Annie's. Any idea. It's Annie's, not Amy's.
No, Roger, I heard the same thing. Not the same thing.
No, it's not.
They don't make burritos. I don't think they have a frozen food.
No, that's Amy's Frozen Foods. But the Worcestershire sauce is Annie's.
Annie's.
And
they really great.
I always loved it because, of course, that's Annette's nickname. And I don't know if they still do it, but there was an organic breakfast cereal that was little bunnies.
That's it. Is that Annie's?
That's Annie's.
And don't they have bunny shaped pasta?
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah,
their macaroni and cheese is quite good.
Yeah.
And their you know, goldfish style snack crackers are little bunnies too.
Uh huh. Yeah, the salad dressings are really good. They make a really good goddess dressing and a really good green goddess dressing. You know, there's a pasta that actually I came across before they actually started making their stuff when they were a startup. They were at my office a number of years ago. And it's made out of chickpeas. So it's
I've had that, and that's like the cauliflower crust pizzas.
Did you like it? I thought it was actually pretty good. I was surprised how much I liked it.
Yeah, it was. I thought the pasta was quite tasty. I'm more ambivalent about the cauliflower.
I agree.
Cauliflower crust pizzas.
Cauliflower should stick to cauliflowering. At least that's my opinion. What the hell do I know?
I like cauliflower. I'm going to make some tonight.
Well, I do too.
I love cauliflower. I confess that, and I think I told this story, the first time after surgery, and I think it was either late November or early December, and it was the first time I went out and did any substantial amount of driving in the Birmingham area. Which is just a great big NASCAR racetrack. Annette and I I know I told this story because this was the day that the Australian girl in my phone fucked me. Because I was looking for a place called Big Bad Breakfast. And she sent me all the way to Hoover. Which I think Joey mentioned in one of his journals recently. And so we got all the way down there. I had not eaten all day. I was saving myself for Big Bad Breakfast because they've got that wonderful red eye gravy and the tomato gravy. And oh my God. We got down there. There was a 2-hour wait and they closed at 2:30 and it was like, you know, noon. So no. And I was getting perilously close to going into the hypoglycemic shocks or shakes rather. And, so then we tried another place. It was called Ruby Sunshine, and we got around to the front of that, and it had a big banner on it that said, "Coming soon!" Fuck. And so next to it was a place called Zoe's Kitchen. I'm like, okay. And we went in, and it was kind of this Mediterranean joint, and I usually love Mediterranean food. This place was terrible. And so I ordered a lunch bowl, and it came with some, falafel. Was it bad? Not falafel. Okay, don't say anything. And it was all on a bed of riced cauliflower. You know, you take cauliflower that's been cooked and you put it through a ricer. And it was ice cold. And it was probably the most depressing meal I've had in the last year. Because I was hungry.
Sounds terrible, Robin. Oh, by the way,
Christopher.
That was the name of the pay-per-view movie I saw last night for $9.99.
Zoe's Kitchen? Or Rice
Cauliflower?
No,
Coming Soon. No, Coming Soon.
No. Hey, okay, you're horrible.
Hey, Robin?
Yeah.
Yeah, cauliflower does not hold heat very well. And when you grind it up or mash it up, it's almost instantly cold.
Well, this stuff was kept chilled. I mean, it wasn't just cold. It was refrigerated.
Oh, that's pure and simple old-fashioned communism. That's what that
is. Cold cauliflower mandrake in children's ice cream.
You never see Russians eat cold cauliflower ice cream, do you?
They only eat cauliflower that's been boiled in vodka.
Vodka. By the way, what the fuck was I going to say? Oh, the reason I asked about the pears is that my favorite pears are the Bosque pears.
Bosque, yeah.
Because they have that kind of vanilla flavor too.
Yo, I love those. And there's an apple out there. Well, speaking of vanilla flavor, have you ever had a pawpaw?
Uh-uh.
It's an Appalachian fruit, and it's not particularly pretty. When it's ripe, it kind of looks like an overripe sort of banana-ish color. But it doesn't look like a banana. But it has a sweet custard flavor that just can't be beat. And they're wonderful. P-A-W-P-A-W, pawpaws.
Isn't that referenced in the song The Bare Necessities from the Walt Disney movie? A prickly pear and a sweet pawpaw, something like that?
I think so. And then way down yonder in the pawpaw patch. And I'm guessing the word pawpaw probably comes from some indigenous tongue.
Didn't Ron DeSantis ban that book, right, from the children's library?
I'm sure he did.
Prickly pear and the pawpaw bush.
Or yeah, no.
To the pawpaw patch. I'll wait for the movie.
Oh, and Tom and Sunny San Rafael passes along his apologies. Amy, Annie's, sorry about that. I searched Annie's and that popped up. My bad. No worries. No worries. So your accuracy rating now, Tom, is down to 99.99% accurate. So.
Hey, Robin, have you heard from Kat? Oh, I'm sorry to interrupt you.
No, I asked her, and hopefully she'll. I may have missed it somewhere along the way. But I have not heard from Kat about whether she's enjoying the coffee. I hope she is. We are past the halfway mark of the program. Well, we're almost to the second hour of the program. And we had $1,500 to raise. We have thus far raised precisely zero. And that is, well, that makes it almost, well, that makes it terrifyingly likely that we won't get through May, and that's horrifying. So it would be nice if we could take a bite out of that. Ralph's has a $25 challenge on the table, and I just heard from Billable Rick the Welcome Back 6666 challenge. Glad to hear you're back. I joined the porch, but my cell phone connection on Skype is poor. Anyway, I'd like to play the role of Lassie and help rescue you from the fundraising hole. To commemorate the 66 that I golfed today in a most unusual way, see below. Hey, Steve, sounds like there's a bunch of background noise there. Could you mute, buddy, please? Thank you. Not being mean. To commemorate the 66 that I golfed today in a most unusual way, see below, I'll pledge $36, that's 6 times 6, to be rounded up to a total of $66 if the first $36 is matched. Here's what happened this morning on the links. I started my round with a double bogey four putt. Oh. And scored 40 on the front nine with only two pars, putting me at 10 over par. Oh, honey. Then things changed on the back nine. I started with a birdie on hole 10, then made another five birdies on the back nine, holes 12, 14, 15, 16, and 18, on my way to a four under par 26, using only 11 putts compared to the 21 putts I had on the front nine. Well, that was enough putts for a lifetime on the front nine. So I shot a 66 for the round, 6 over par, with 6 birdies. The longest putt I made on the back nine was 20 feet, and I rolled in a couple of 15-footers and shorter putts for the birds. Thus, the 66-6-6 challenge. P.S. Is it still possible to sign up for the Horn-In? short answer is yes. We'd love to have you, Billable. And I think it's going to be a fine, fine, fine time and a lot of fun. So if you want to, just go to GoFundRobin, GoFundRobin, and all the instructions are there. It would be an absolute delight to have you there. Joey asked me the same thing, and it would be grand. I'd love to have an even bigger party. So the 6666 challenge is on the table. That would knock us down by $66. If people will pitch in $36 and $25 for Ralph, so $36, $46, $56, $61 would get us $122 down off of the $1,500 hole and fill in some of that space. And $122, that would mean we were down to $1,378. So, when I'm gone, things were already rough before, and some of that may be with the fact that we don't have a stream going out over White Rose, or it may be that people can't play the damn show because of the encoder screw up. It's just a sort of a perfect storm. So if we can remedy some of that, it'd be fantastic. By the way, thanks to our dear friends, Brandon and Fennell, and thank you to Dennis in Columbus, who are contributors via the United States Postal Service over at the UPS store in Beckley, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318. Beckley, West Virginia, 25801. And I hope to check the mail. Check the mail this weekend. It's going to be, and let's see. So that takes the fundraising goal down to, thanks to Dennis and Brandon and Fennell. That takes the fundraising goal down to, $1,425, so we will subtract from $1,425 if the two challenges are met. Also, don't forget the challenge that Steve in New York has put forward. That is the Laurel's Butter Challenge, Laurel's Butters. And it is a really, really cool one. For $200, Steve will send you 15 jars of her butters. You can go to laurelsbutter.com and find out all the flavors. For $150, Steve will send 12. Your choice of the flavors, whatever you want, go to laurelsbutter.com to find them, and Steve will get them to you post haste, and you will be, your taste buds will sing an aria. Jude tells me Mike focused this week on the football coach from Bremerton, Joseph Kennedy, who's also a retired U.S. Marine. My understanding is he and his wife have moved to Florida. Yet he's open to returning to the former football coach position. That's why it's required to be present on that soil till the Supreme Court's decision is rendered. I offer this one for those who are drawn to stand with us. Be well, says Jude. Thank you, Jude, for being there and focusing your attention and intentions on the protection of the Republic. Meanwhile, y'all don't miss a lick. And that was probably the wrong language, wrong terminology. But Matt in San Francisco, referencing what I said a moment ago, the Australian girl in my phone fucked me. Phone fucked me? Which update was that, says Matt? These smartphones are really onto something. Oh, eventually they probably will. Dear God. But then again, you know, there's all kinds of apps out there, so. I don't think there's any risk of me becoming a cam girl anytime soon.
As you were speaking, I'm frantically going through my apps and my settings on my phone.
Yeah, which one is that?
I couldn't find it. I just tried all the options. Jeez.
Oh, and God. I might as well just go ahead. I mean, you know, like I said, I'm going to share all of this transition with y'all because I think it's important. And sometimes it's hilarious, sometimes it's tragic, Sometimes it's infuriating. And at the encouragement of my best friend in the whole wide world, I signed up on a dating app. The dating...
Oh, is this the point when you tell us about creepy emails? Come on.
Oh, you really want that?
You know I love them. You know I love them.
I know you do, Jeremy. And so do, you'd be surprised how many people do. Yeah, so I can go to a creepy email. But no, I signed up on one, and it's like, you know, you put... you know, you fill out the stupid little questionnaires and stuff. And one of the questions for me was, we'll get along if ... old DJ moment. So I wrote, if you like pina coladas and getting caught in the rain. So ashamed. But my God, the dating pool. Oh my God, it's a muddy hoof print in West Texas. There's just no depth to it. And what it sent me with sigh, with sorrow. But okay.
Maybe before you talk about this, you need to start the Civil War music.
No. You know, I think it's even past that.
You know, I'm wondering if we have a list of eHarmony rejects in our immediate future.
Well, I'm guessing I'd get bounced off Christian Mingle pretty quick.
Well, now this website, this dating site, is this like a? Because I have found from hard-won experience that the ones that you pay for are somewhat better, measurably better, than the free dating sites. I'm just saying. Not that I use them anymore, but... Because a lot of people like that freebie thing, and it's that old adage, you get what you pay for. I don't mean that in a vice cop sort of way, but... You know what I mean.
Oh, I do.
I think the Civil War music would make a nice touch to what we may be hearing.
Well, this is...
I think it'd be terrific.
All right. This is a full-service radio program. Even though we're goose-egging so far, I'll cooperate.
Oh, the money will come pouring
Start
in.
Singing.
You watch.
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't make me cue up the Pat Boone medal.
Oh shit.
Actually, today would have been the 100th birthday of Toots Thielemans, the Belgian guitarist and harmonica player. Play a little Toots.
Well, no. We've got to deal with this shit in order. We got to deal with an ad on YouTube first.
Be careful, Scott. You keep saying Toots. You're going to summon Dustin Hoffman if you say that three times.
Well, that's his nickname.
You know, I watched that not too long back. Tootsie. And I know, and it was a beloved film at the time. But it is... It is so problematic now because, among other things, I think I know where the right-wing transphobes are getting their talking points. And frankly, part of it comes from Tootsie.
Tootsie.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
Yeah, because, you know, he falls in love with... Jessica Lange, right?
Yeah.
Man,
it's been a million years since I've seen that movie.
And then
Charles Durning hits on him.
Right. Well, all of my matches on this dating site are Charles Durning. Okay? Let's just put it that way.
Oh, my Lord.
Tremendous respect for the man. You know, shot all to hell in the war, you know. Amazing man. But, you know, still. And, of course, Ned Beatty had the hardest part. Never mind. That's a Deliverance joke. But, no, the Dustin Hoffman character basically gets really, really close to the Jessica Lange character as a pretend woman. And then the secret comes out and she hates him because she feels like that he preyed upon her feelings while masquerading as a female. And that's what, you know, all these goddamn bathroom bills are about. Well, you know, somebody's just going to wake up one morning and say, you know, I'm feeling like a woman today, so I'm going to go to the ladies' room. I mean, they literally say that.
I know.
When it's, no, nobody does that. I mean, did these fuckers not go through high school? Can you imagine what happens to a boy who comes out as trans? Because I know.
Well, these fucking Republicans, I mean, they're going to throw stones in glass houses when it comes to public restrooms. Yeah. Who was the tiptoeing guy at the Minnesota airport?
Yeah, that would be Larry Craig, former senator of Idaho. Yeah, right.
Yeah. So
and why do we not throw that back in their faces? By the way, thank you, Brian. Brian finally broke the goose egg, and Billable Rick's challenge was specifically met. So thank you, Billable Rick. Thank you, Brian. That leaves the $25 challenge from Ralph's to be handled. And, Lord, going into May with a with somewhere around a $1,000 fundraising hole, it's not sustainable. It's just not. But thank you, Brian. Thank you so much. We are into the third hour of the program. Okay. Wait a minute. Let's do this. I'm so ashamed. Okay, so here's the setup. I see a message in my messenger, and of course, Facebook, Zuckerberg tells you, you've been friends since 2016. Well, of course, 2016 was way pre-transition. And if I said yes to a friend request, it's usually because I've checked out the profile. It's like, okay, you probably, yeah, whatever, and try to build audience. So this guy, Joel, won't use his last name, and it's kind of a social experiment. It's like a dirty version of 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon. You know, how many back and forth will there be before he says something filthy to me? Because girl. Oh, thank you, Jack and Shreveport. Ralph's challenge is met. And so that means 1425 minus Ralph's challenge is met and $25 more on top of that. So, so we're 1425 minus 141, 1325, 1304. No. Somebody do the math for me because I'm trying to set up this bit here. 1325 minus 141. Or 1425 minus 141. This is getting so confusing. So y'all see my posts. I'm not posting anything dirty, right? Mostly I'm posting stuff about my hopes for the campaign, issues that I want to talk about, bring to the table, and I post a picture of me. Because, you know, like I said, everybody gets to come along on this transition. A lot of trans women will not talk about that. And not put it out there publicly, because it's a dangerous time for us. But there are so many people who are so curious. And I'm too old to be scared. I'm not scared anymore. The scary part went away with my transition. That was what I was scared of. People would find out who I was. And there was a lot of fear that came with coming out. I was afraid on December 31st, 2020, I was afraid the show would be over. And shame on me for thinking that. So this guy, you've been friends since 2016. And I don't know which picture it was. I mean, post a bunch of pictures. Last Sunday, I posted a picture of me and Miss Bobby having lunch. Ooh, sexy time. It's amazing how dirty-minded people can be from a picture that is just a picture of a couple of girls having lunch. So, he writes, and again, it becomes a social experiment. How long is it going to take before this gets dirty? Your, Y-O-U-R, a keeper. Wait a minute. Got to get the music started. Let the chuckling begin. You're a keeper. I replied, thanks. I was looking at your post is why I said that. I appreciate it. Because I do want people to look at my posts. And he said, thanks, kindred spirits. And I gave him a thumbs up. And he gave me a thumbs up. And then he said, do you like to chat? And I'm like, oh, here we go. I said, I have a busy schedule, so I have very little free time. And he writes, I know that. I just love giving you a hard time. I think you know that by now. I hope. I said, yeah, you're fine. Now, bear in mind, I just told him I don't have time to chat. What do you like to chat about? I'm very political. About to slurp down some oysters at the moment, because I was at dinner. Yes, same here. I work as a volunteer in the Democratic Party, precinct delegate, sure you do, and was Volunteer of the Year a few years ago. I'm 58 and separated. How about you? Oh, God, here we go. 59 and divorced, I said. So he says, so are you more happy now? I said, I'm happier living my authentic life. Good for you. And then there it is. There it is. I do miss sex, though. Haven't had much of that lately. And then I can take care of it myself, but not as much fun. I said, well, not a lot of experience since surgery. Which is true. What surgery is that? Well, somebody's not a listener to the program, that's for fucking sure. I said, you do know I'm a trans woman, right? And then comes the question. Do you have a penis now? Or a vagina?
The music is perfect.
And so I kind of called him out on it. I said, you know, you don't just walk up to some. I said, when's the last time somebody came up and asked you that? And he goes, so are you back to enjoying sex then? Good for you and enjoying it more? I said, yeah, I haven't found the right person yet. Well, I can take care of that. And I spend a portion of my day that I never had to spend before, back before transition. I never had to go through. What
did he include a photo? Is he wearing a Cary Grant ascot?
No. No. Although many do. I mean, it's not like it's a mystery. And I don't understand the culture now of, hey, let me send you a picture of my genitals. I've never done that. Ever. Never felt the urge to.
Welcome to the world of online. dating, Robin.
Jesus Christ!
They're out there. You think they're out there just in your workaday world of being a broadcaster. They are out there big time.
Well, and you know, and Steve points out, penis or vagina, now that's a keeper. Well, and you take your little victories where you get them, because at least it wasn't a euphemism. They were actual technical terms.
Yes, I still have one. It's in a jar on the shelf. It's like tonsils.
No, my standard answer is I upgraded.
There you go.
But I used OEM equipment. Original equipment manufacturer.
Yeah.
But like I said, before I transitioned, I had my Instagram account. I never had to go through, because, you know, you'll get notified, so-and-so followed you. Well, now I have to go over and check out so-and-so, and he'll either have a private account, in which case that's Instablock. Because if you're afraid for me to sit, never mind. Or if it's a public account, I go and check who he's following, and there's like 900 trans women. In which case, he's a creepy chaser. And then you check the messages. Oh, my Lord. I mean, help me here. Because, again, I was never that guy.
No.
What is it that makes a guy think he is empowered? And see, this is where it would be awfully handy to have helpful. It would be awfully helpful to have some women in this conversation to see if they get the same thing, or if it, because, you know, you're just checking your social media and, oh, well, there's a Johnson.
Yeah, Robin, be careful with that word handy. But that question, penis or vagina, reminds me of that old commercial. Is it live or is it Memorex?
Oh, God, Christopher, you're not helping, honey.
Robin, if you guys start OnlyFans, because then at least these people can pay us anything.
Wait, no, one at a time. What, Jeremy?
So do you need to start OnlyFans? Because at least then these people have to pay you to send these nasty messages. You'll make money out of it. Come on.
Yeah, because that would be great for my political career, right?
I forgot about that part. Damn it.
Cam girl runs for legislature. I'd have to work out three times a day for the next 10 years to even get close to. Oh my God!
Hey, Mary Carey ran for governor in California.
Did she win?
She's a full fledged porn star.
Did she win?
Full-fledged porn star.
Did she win?
Came close, literally came close. No, she didn't.
Yeah, see. But it just, I mean, oh my, the things I've learned. Let me see if I can find. Well, let's just say that I've deleted a lot of them. And by them, I mean those. And by those, I mean ill. Just ill. So, all right, I have met resolved your prurient interest, Jeremy. I hope you're proud of yourself.
Well, see, I haven't online dated for quite a while.
I've heard better,
and maybe it's changed, but it's for a lot of people out there, it's a three slow dances and we're in love sort of mindset, you know, and that is to be avoided. I mean, I remember one woman that she answered me or I answered her, and it was in the first phone call, she was ready to set up housekeeping. And it's like breaks. Think of the concept known as breaks. You know, the chat is a getting to know you sort of thing. And there are plenty of off ramps, you know, along the way. And it's not so much a prurient interest as it is, you know, help, assisting you in avoiding pitfalls. And I'm sure there are even more of them if you're on a specific website. Or maybe it's not a specific website. That's what I...
Well, here's how weird and pervy they can get. I mean, I know how much people enjoy it when Malloy shares his hate mail. And this isn't exactly hate mail. This is just perv mail. And they think they're clever. So here's a message request from someone who calls himself Jason Isbell Fans Only. Now, I am a Jason Isbell fan. I love Jason Isbell's music. He comes from the same neck of the woods in northwest Alabama. I do. He's a tremendous talent. He and his wife, Amanda Pearl Shires, both listen to him a lot. So this genius names his Instagram account Jason Isbell Fans Only. J-A-N-S-O-N Isbell _ fans _ only. And I'm supposed to be so dippy and blonde, but I think I'm being written to by the head of the Jason Isbell fan club or something. Their profile says, thank you for your support in my music career, fams, with a microphone and headphone icon. And by the way, in the profile, he has exactly zero posts, 182 followers, and following 267, they're all, you know, the 267 are all trans women. The 182 are all bots, but it's a private account, so he'll get zapped. Just borrow the lightsaber and wail away. And so the message is, hello, pretty. Thanks for your likes and sweet comments on my main Instagram post at Jason Isbell. I really appreciate your love and support in my music career. How are you doing today? Hey, how are you, Gorge? And there are oodles of them. You know, some of them are your skeevy, your skeevy Russian types. You can and the Chinese, bots and whatnot, and you can sort those out by just by language usage.
One of the big tip-offs is if the grammar and the sentence structure is like instructions to put together a Chinese table. You ever read?
Yes. And that's exactly what they're like. So here's another one from L. And she says,
E-L-L-E or
yeah, E-L-L-E. Hi, how are you doing? I'm Elizabeth, an escort. It's capital E, Elizabeth, no comma, and capital E, escort. Are you seeking for a trans woman for to spend good and quality time hooking up with? And then an emoji with a tongue sticking out. Bye. And like I said, I spend a too large a portion of my day every day now deleting this shit.
You know, Scott, sometimes those bots are clever, though. They'll send you something that sounds like a normal message. I'll usually send back when they ask me my name, like, the sky is blue. And it sends back a response, oh, I'm so glad you wrote back. I'm so glad to hear from you. I know it's an automatic response, and I block and delete.
So I just thought I would, like I said, at least Jeremy enjoys them. So that was all. And by the way, thank you for the math help, Billable Rick. Math death, 1425 minus 141 equals 1,284. And so Jude says women standing offers support. And that gets us down to 1259. Thank you, Jude. And thank you, Ralphs, for the challenge. And Cat in Ohio, 1229. We're down to 1229. Thanks for the laughs, creepy fox, says Jeremy. So we're down to 1219. Thank you, Jeremy. I was just giving you a little bit of hell.
Hey,
put me down for 15, Robin.
So that gets us down to 1204. Thank you, Christopher. Thank you so much.
If any of them want to know what's in your refrigerator besides eggs and milk, if they feel skeevy, just tell them 3 severed human heads.
I was going to go for the severed human heads, yes, and 15 pints of urine. I'm drinking it to ward off the Rona. And I've got
wearing your empty Kleenex box slippers.
I've got onions in my Cuban heeled stockings.
And you've got several unused boxes of neon light tubes too. Don't forget about those.
right. So we're down to 1204. Thank you. And Jude says, maybe when you get the first hint of this distantly odd voyeurism, Robin, immediately delete. No need to let any of that even enter your vessel. There's so much on your plate. You gotta look at them to delete them. And so, I mean, you got to go as far as the profile to find out if it's private before you lightsaber them. Because, I mean, I want to be an Instagram influencer, damn it. You know, me and Kim Kardashian. Because, you know. My dearest Kimberly, I'm going to go and get a lot of liposuction fat injected into my posterior, and then we will take selfies together. Okay, that's enough of that.
That reminds me of this whole experience made me think, and this God was back in the 70s, maybe the early 80s. There was an outfit outside of Chicago, one of the Illinois suburbs of Chicago. And it was one of these lovelorn sort of pen pal sort of deals. And I guess it was in a magazine article or a TV expose. It turned out it was elderly ladies writing the replies. I mean, that's old school. Now we've got internet and the adventure magnifies itself by a factor of a zillion, because with internet, nobody knows you're a dog. Remember that?
Yes, Scott, I think they had a class for that at the Wheaton College, might be what you're talking about.
No, I don't know anything about a class. This was sort of a scam sort of thing where they would advertise in the back of tabloids or something, and usually they'd get replies from prisoners or shut-ins or something, and they finally shut them down. I want to say it was Evanston, but it wasn't Evanston, Illinois. It was one of those other suburbs. There's got to be a better way, and I don't know what it is. I wish I knew and I could tell you, but it's my heart aches. Because it's as if life doesn't have enough fucking pitfalls in terms of interacting with other human beings. And then you've got, what was his name? Jor-El? Jor-El? He's not listening. It's not writing to me. I don't need that.
Oh, I doubt he's listening.
No, that was Joel.
And Cary Grant Ascot.
Yeah, right. Right. Yeah, sure.
Stylish haircut.
you can see how it gets a little depressing. It's like, nope. I mean, I have friends who, oh no, he's out there. I'm like, no, he ain't. No, he's not. Mm-mm, definitely not.
Kind of a change in topics here.
Go right ahead, Roger. Thank you.
Did you get my message to you that I sent via the contact the program chat?
When?
about 10, 15 minutes ago.
So that's a no?
Okay. I'll resend it, but I also had a problem with the PayPal number. Anyhow, I'd like to get back to the horn end as,
yes,
as a topic of conversation.
Absolutely.
Officially, what is the day time that it starts?
Well, Thursday evening is an arrival thing, so, you know, I'll have some wings and some pizza out and stuff like that,
okay,
just to nosh on. And then we get going in earnest on Friday, and, you know, I'll have breakfast out and stuff. You know, Friday evening, I anticipate we will have the first ever live and in-person Friday on the front porch.
Okay.
And then, you know, afterward, people are free to do what they want to do. I mean, you know, there's a couple of little, there's a little pub and there's a little, couple of little bars. And, yeah, I don't think anybody's going to be hungry, but it's possible. And then
Saturday is kind of a group tour of the gorge.
Yeah, we'll go around to some places where people can access various views of the gorge. There's some trails that are easier than others. If you want to just, you know, walk around, there's some places that have absolutely beautiful views of the bridge, not hard to get to. I'll provide means for, because, you know, not everybody has the same degree of ability. And so,
yeah, well, my walking ability is rather limited at this time, although I used to do a lot of it. The reason I'm asking is we're flying in and out of Charleston,
right,
and renting a car, and my wife's one of these people that she wants a motel reservation for every night, 4 days in advance kind of crap, whereas my touring was just, yeah, you drive along till you find a motel and say, okay, this is it, this is where I'm going to stay tonight. And
well, that's always been my philosophy. But of course, you know, I'll have the accommodations all managed. I mean, so Thursday night, Friday night, and Saturday night will be covered.
Okay. Thursday, Friday, and Sat.
Disability access changes some of the dynamics, but I'll make sure that I've got a couple accommodate.
I'm
not saying you, but I'll have a couple of rooms set aside for people who need disability accommodations, and then other accommodations for people who don't.
Yeah, but we're looking at making sort of a circular tour because we're going to be in West Virginia for about 10 days.
Oh, awesome!
And we're just trying to settle that all up. So I was wondering about what the nights were as the horn in and what we need to do on our own and, you know, that kind of stuff.
Saturday evening, I thought we would probably go down to Maggie's. It's real low key, laid back. I'm going to talk to the proprietors there about putting out food. And, there's things like they usually have karaoke, things like that. And then, you know, there are a number of really fun little, you know, if people get tired of my cooking, there are fun little there's a pizza place that's really, really super good. And they've got excellent craft beers. There's a nice pan-Asian place, you know, Japanese and Thai. And then just it depends on where you want to go and what you want to do, because I don't want to just monopolize people's time. I want you to be able to go around and see how magnificent this place is, because it's going to be at its, well, with the exception of autumn, it's going to be at its absolute most beautiful. You know, Darlene and I agree philosophically on autumn, but when the colors are on, it's amazing. But green and blooming and red buds won't be, the red buds will be gone by then, but something will be beautiful in the, you know, in the woods. And there are trails, you can start on that are not hard to negotiate. There's a couple of paved trails that are real easy to get down for a view into the gorge. Just a lot. There's a lot of different options.
I was just up at the kids' farm on Wednesday, and the dogwoods are starting to bloom up here. So that's always a nice little number to catch. Now, trees blooming, trees in flower are kind of nice, particularly wild trees. I mean, you got your cherries and your plums and peaches and apples and all that. But when you see a wild tree out in the woods with 4-inch across white flowers, it's
right now the hills are sort of a, you know, that kind of grayish purple of a wisteria blossom.
Yeah.
The hills are gray, purple, and pink right now.
Well, and here in Oregon, the hazelnuts are in bloom, so you've got the tassels in all the hazelnut trees.
Oh, yeah, and in the autumn, the tassels on the chestnuts here are like that. They're everywhere.
And staying on a culinary note, wife and I decided to work on cleaning out the freezers, so we did 27 and a half-pint jars of hot pepper jelly. That's yesterday and today. So we've been busy. But I just wanted to get that information about the horn in, not only to me, but to other people, because you've been really silent about it for quite some time. And after I bought my airplane tickets, I'm going,
Oh, no, we got to the point where I thought as many people were going to show up as were going to show up and, you know, mention it here and there, now and then. I've been building the itinerary. I'm working. I don't know if I will have the book fully published by the time we get there, but I'm hoping I will. Because I've pulled it together, and it's a matter of getting the cooperation of the publisher at this point. You know, I'm going to self-publish, but, you know, the supply chains and everything are just a complete wreck. But, you know, we'll do a little reading, and I think the live horn-in should be an absolute blast if people are up for it and into it. We'll bring in the group on via Skype as well, a separate channel. And I think it'll just be a really, really fantastic dynamic. And, you know, there's history. For those who want to drive, I don't know that we can put together a group trip, but if you want to go see what mountaintop removal looks like, I can give you kind of a map. So, because a lot of it comes out to the road now, they quit hiding it. And one of the weird things, Roger, is that, you know, we can talk about it all day long. You can see photographs of it, but when it's the remnants or the corpse of a humongous mountain that's just right there in front of your face, you really get a visceral understanding of how truly awful it is.
Well, historic here, the Redwood National Park, when it was being created back in the mid to late 60s, was kind of having a hard time until an outfit called Arcata Redwood Company decided to put a yarder set right next to the highway on 101. And as soon as that hillside got logged and that first winter with the rains coming down, and because they dragged the redwood logs up, there were all these furrows that came down the hillside, and they all turned into straight shot down creeks doing incredible erosion. But as soon as they stopped leaving the buffer alongside the highway and showed the world what a real logging show looked like up close and personal as you were driving down the highway, all of a sudden the public perception shifted mightily and the Redwood National Park became a real thing. Basically because Arcata Redwood fucked up and did it out in the open and kind of a fuck you to the world, and they turned around and got fucked.
Well, and see, that's the thing. They haven't gotten that close to the national park, but it is out to the road, like on the West Virginia Turnpike. You can zip right by a humongous mountaintop removal operation. then it's right there in front of your face. There's a couple of places you can get off the road, and you know you're it's not like some sort of wagon rut trail, but you can drive a little ways up the road and you can see it on the backside, and it will creep you out. I mean, it's really weird. At our local Walmart, there's a little bit of a rise as you're leaving the parking lot. And on a clear day, you can see where they blasted the bejesus out of a mountain complex that probably is not 5 miles as the crow flies from the boundaries of the park.
Yeah, well, greed'll get you in trouble, but they laugh all the way to the bank.
Well, yeah, and the thing is, you have enough of a state there, Roger, for there to be a humongous outcry and for a legislature to actually be responsive to it as opposed to simply being a wholly owned subsidiary of the industry. And that is not the case here.
Well, up there on the Redwood Coast, there's not a... I mean, there is traffic on the Highway 101, but Humboldt County is so far and away from any population center that... That's the original reason for the state of Jefferson was the people in Northern California felt Sacramento wasn't taking care of them, and the people in Southern Oregon felt Salem wasn't taking care of them, and they wanted to carve a state out of the
free state
the
of Jefferson
counties.
Yeah, free state of Jefferson. I remember when
was back in the 40s,
and then it got revived. I remember when Sparky first hipped us to it.
It got revived, but it got revived as a redneck bullshit number because of the overreach of the government wanting to create parks and put us out of a job and blah, blah, blah.
Jobs.
The original state of Jefferson, the movement died at the onset of World War II. And it was, okay, look, we're in a war. We're going to put aside this 49th state movement and go for the war effort, and then after the war we'll revive it. And they tried to revive it a little bit after the war, but the jobs were picking up and the timber industry picked up and counties had money for building roads and that kind of thing, and it kind of died. And then it came back with the demise of the John Birch Society. The state of Jefferson became a movement in conservative politics. A lot of people don't realize that, but that's what happened. I mean, I've talked to some people flying the state of Jefferson flags up here and, you know, tried to encourage them to tell me about the state of Jefferson, and then informed them that it actually started prior to World War II, and they told me I was a fucking liar. And I said, well, read some history, and walked away. I mean, you can't educate stupid people. Ignorance can be cured, but not stupidity.
Yeah, stupidity is beyond the...
it's a terminal disease.
Yeah, and it's beyond the notion of any sort of cure, I guess.
Yeah, but yeah. Roger, they're still doing their research, you know.
Yeah, well, I got a crystal ball, too, and it gives me just the same bullshit.
Yes.
It says the vision's a little foggy. Ask me later. You know.
Oh, and let me send out some thank yous. Tom and Sonny San Rafael just got us down to 1164, so we are squarely in the Middle Ages. And Frank got us down to 1134. Thank you both so very much. $134 more, and we'll at least be down to $1,000 deficit for the month of April. So thank you to both of you. You got a note, Roger, from Jude. Kevin from Colorado Springs shared with me that you were a math teacher. I may have misheard, but immediately I remembered a math teacher in my freshman year. Geometry was completely out of my realm of foundational understanding. That thoughtful teacher offered time every day in seeking to open a door for me. It never happened, yet he gave me a D when I deserved an F. Roger's voice reminds me of that teacher. Can't remember his name, but his presence is embedded within me. Thank you for the memory, Roger. Warmly sent, Jude.
Well, I was a math teacher. I'll have to admit to that. It's what's sending me money every month for the rest of my life, and some of it ends up in Robin's coffers. So, And I haven't received a response from PayPal, so I guess my number didn't make it through. But what I wanted to do was, in light of the 25 or so jars of hot pepper jelly I made, I wanted to do a $50 challenge and not meet anybody else's challenge. This is a brand new one.
Nope, no challenges on the table.
Okay, so there's a 50 out there, and I'll hang in and make sure that the original number that I sent didn't get charged and end up doing two, because that will really irritate my wife, and I don't need to have that happen. So anyhow, there's a $50 challenge on the table in honor of hot pepper jelly, which I'll probably end up bringing a jar to West Virginia.
Well, it will not last long.
Oh, I don't know. This we tasted it before I processed it, and this stuff is hot, hot.
So, I have a feel. I'm pretty sure it will not last long.
Well, it's a combination of aji amarillos and jalapenos. So we didn't put any bell pepper in to cut the heat.
And you know what? I will be waiting with a tub of cream cheese and some sourdough. I will be a happy girl.
We kind of like it with brie and like Ritz or club crackers.
Ooh, wow. Brie would be lovely. Now, I got to ask, because anytime you bring up brie, the great philosophical debate begins. Do you eat the rind or do you not eat the rind?
I eat the rind. I mean, it's just mold. Why not?
I do. I eat the rind.
Well, you know, there are rinders and rind trimmers out there.
I mean, if you zap it in the microwave for a little bit and get it runny, then I just eat the centers. But if it's a chunk of cold brie, I eat the rind.
I love
eat the rind and suck the head.
Well, absolutely. We all know how to deal with our crawfish, don't we?
Yes, we do.
Mud bugs, baby. Yeah, mm-hmm. I love a baked brie en croûte. Baked brie en croûte, you know, where you wrap it in the puff pastry and bake it at fairly low temperature. And the pastry just does what puff pastry does, and then it's all, you know, melty and warm and heavenly.
And gooey.
Yes. Well, I can happily tell you, Roger, that your challenge has been met by Kevin and Tracy up in Massachusetts. Thank you, Kevin and Tracy. That was fantastic. And so that gets us down to 1064. We're only 2 years before the Battle of Hastings and the invasion of Britain.
Hey, Robin.
Yes.
I have a quick question. Prior to the program today, did you spend any time with MSNBC?
A very little, yes.
Well, what prompted it? Somebody mentioned Laughing All the Way to the Bank, and there's a new person, Laughing All the Way to the Bank, who was on, for inexplicable reasons, on MSNBC today, Dr. Pretty Scarf Nice Lady, whose real name I forget. But
Deborah Burks.
Yeah. She's got a book. Can you imagine? And she was...
Yeah, imagine that.
Mayor culping her scarf to self to beat the bank.
Oh, I cut her a lot of slack at the beginning of the pandemic, but I ran out of slack pretty quick.
Yeah, well, that's what I mean, and I will sooner buy a Mark Levin book than buy her book.
Which is to say, you'll buy it right after the Earth is a burned out cinder when the sun explodes.
Along about that time, yeah, depending on whether it's daylight or standard. It may be sooner or maybe later. But what I'm saying is, I mean, she was just mea culpa. If you look in the dictionary, there's a line drawing of her next to the definition. I have never heard so much self-serving horseshit in my life about how she was doing this behind the scenes and doing that behind the scenes, and her team of people were right on top of it. Well, none of that trickled into Trump's mad pronouncements in the run-up to this thing, in the very early days when good information mattered, you know. I'm sorry you didn't see that. It might be online if you want to revisit it. because I have no patience whatsoever with these revisionists who want to say just how put upon they were and trying to do the right thing, and they were cut off at every turn. Kiss my slinky or something. It just doesn't play with me. And we're probably going to hear, there's still books to be written. I'm sure we'll see some more of them as time goes on.
The Library of Congress doesn't have enough room for the Trump books.
And I weep for the trees whose lives were lost, you know, to print these fucking books.
Yeah, Deborah Burks. I'll buy her book as soon as Rush Limbaugh gets back from vacation and sits behind the desk at the EIB network again.
Well, he's going to have to sit on a couple of pillows before he sits on the desk. What with the pineapple situation? Excuse me, the reverse pineapple situation. Anyway, I wanted to throw that in case anybody wants to miss the interview and wants to see it. It made me want to throw something at my TV.
Oh, it's nauseating. But I was pleased to see that the dipshit twins aren't getting along. That's helpful.
Yeah.
And the hard dead end. Cancerous core of the maggots around Nitwit Nero down at Mar-a-Lardass have apparently gotten the long knives out for Miss Maddie Cawthorn. That's nice.
I want to know when the $2 billion that Jared Kushner got is going to get elevated to the same level as Hunter Biden, and all the money he took from whomever. It just kind of seems to have died. The $2 billion. I mean, you know, I guess it's like Khashoggi, but anyhow, any concern about Jared's $2 billion just doesn't seem to be showing up anywhere.
No, and I kind of blame the inability of the for-profit media to walk and chew gum at the same time.
And or the, and I really can't put the blame on Bernie or AOC, but how come the Democratic group isn't pounding on that as hard as the Republicans pounded on Benghazi, or they pounded on Hunter Biden? About the only time I see it is some redneck bullshit bitching about Biden and inflation and how Biden is.
I am so sick of that, Roger. I could bark at the moon. It's like nobody I'm no economist, but it's like nobody understands anything about how economies work now.
Now, the other thing that frosts my ass is here we are confiscating Russian oligarchs' super yachts because we need to get back at Putin and how they've stolen money from the people of Russia, and the oligarchs have stolen this, and we need to take it back to help the people of Ukraine. What the hell difference is it between a Russian oligarch super yacht and a United States citizen super yacht? They all stole the productivity money from the workers to get those fucking yachts. And if the Russian yachts are so terrible that we need to confiscate them because what's so terrible, what Putin has done in Ukraine, how come we didn't confiscate the U.S. yachts for the bullshit baby Bush did in Iraq? We all sat around, watched CNN do wall-to-wall coverage on the shock and awe campaign in Baghdad that looked like a 4th of July festival for a fucking month and devastated Baghdad, and that was all really good. But when they dropped missiles into Kiev or any of the Ukrainian cities. Oh, this is fucking terrible. They're bombing civilian targets. What the hell? Come on, folks. Wake up to the hypocrisy of what's going on. And neither CNN nor MSNBC can even see that what Russia is doing. Yes, it's terrible. I'm not knocking that. I'm not trying to say it's good. It's terrible. But how come it was so rah-rah for us when we did it in Vietnam, we did it in Baghdad?
Hey, Roger, the answer is right in front of your face.
Yeah,
melanin,
I know.
Melanin content of the people in that city that you're talking about. That's
Yeah, we're bombing white folks now instead of brown folks. Well, exactly. No, Russia is bombing white folks. We bomb brown folks. So bombing brown folks is good, but bombing white folks is bad.
Well, no. Let's be clear. Bombing brown folks is bad if we're not doing it, because they slaughtered the shit out of Syria.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but we didn't get upset about Syria.
Yeah, we didn't. I mean, maybe a little bit of the for-profit media got their undies in a bunch a little bit about Syria, but not a whole lot. Who really gave a shit?
Well, in order to understand the dynamic with the for-profit media, they're all about the spectacle. They've got to fill those 22 minutes with something, and they really don't care what the 22 minutes of news content, news block, is filled with.
Nope.
And once you know that, you know what a big chunk of the problem is.
As long as it gets eyes on the screen.
Well, let me and thank you, Raymond. Thank you, Raymond, for jumping in. We are now down to 10:39 to go. 39 more dollars, and we'll only have a $1,000 fundraising hold closing April. Thank you, Raymond. Thank you so much. We're almost out of time, but this needs be answered. And I'm just guessing at the way the policy people's minds work. And by policy people, I'm talking about policy people inside, for instance, news organizations. And my guess is, and it's not an excuse, it's just how they think, we can't compare what is going on in Ukraine with the dirty, rotten, filthy, stinking, illegal war that we waged against the innocent people of Iraq and killed a million non-combatant Iraqis. We can't draw that bright line, because if we do, in the way that they think, we will undermine the support for pushing back against Ukraine when we don't even have boots on the ground there. Because the biggest distinction I can see over disagreement about Ukraine, you know, you've got your maggots, and they're rooting for Putin. Oh, I'm so ashamed. But the distinction is, should we keep just letting it be Ukraine's fight and we supply them, or should we put American boots on the ground? If you recall the clip from earlier this week of Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, he said that he posited that if we had allowed Ukraine into NATO, that we would now have American soldiers fighting this war. Completely oblivious, and frankly, Secretary of State Blinken pointed out, well, no, you know, you can just as easily make the argument that if we had brought Ukraine into NATO, Putin would have had to understand that if he attacked Ukraine, he would have the entirety of Europe fighting against him. And that seems every bit as compelling an argument. So I think if we I don't not point that out, and have mentioned it on a number of occasions. Counting, what was it, 10 million civilian dead in Vietnam, Roger?
Is that many? Holy fuck.
And that's just the civilians.
I don't have a number for Vietnam.
Oh, my God. Wow.
those were, you know, those were the people who were just, and so it's not much of an explanation, but it is an explanation.
My experience on dealing with the Vietnam carnage is the Loran station I was at on Guam, our antenna was lined up perfectly with the runways up at Anderson Air Force Base, 35 miles away. And the planes took off out over the ocean, but when they came in right over our Loran station. And they could land a B-52 every 90 seconds up there at Anderson Air Force Base, every minute and a half.
Jesus.
And they would fly over our tower, and we knew which runway they were going to land on by which side of our tower the planes were flying. And it would take them an hour and a half to bring the B-52 flights in. Okay?
And yeah, almost landing like a Berlin airlift kind of situation.
Yeah. And that was like a daily or every other day occurrence. And the ships would come into Apra Harbor. That's the naval station where the Loran station was. And they would unload the ships. And then they ran about 6 hours is about the time span to run the bombs from the boats that brought them in up to Anderson Air Force Base. And when a ship came in, it took them like a week of semis rolling through the main streets of, it's been too long. The main town in Guam, but they did them at night because the only road that went right through downtown. Agana is the name of the town. And so they did it between like midnight and 6 o'clock in the morning because they wanted less traffic and all the rest of that. And then they took back roads once they could take back roads, then they could take back roads. But there was only one road going north from the harbor to Anderson. And it was like a semi every 5 minutes going through town, loaded with bombs, driving them right through the middle of downtown, taking them up to Anderson to load onto the B-52s. And that was just an ongoing for the whole year and a half I was there. I heard something the other day that the bombs we dropped more tonnage in Vietnam than we dropped all over Europe in World War II.
That's what I was going to say. And in previous calls when I addressed this Ukraine thing, and the coverage of it, so-called coverage of it, I refer to it as war porn. And they love the salacious, stimulating visuals, just like actual porn, but they don't look behind that at the human misery that brings that type of porn and war porn to the screen. The whys and the wherefores. They'll show you all of the titillating photographs of what's going on in the various cities, but they never really do the dig down that's necessary, you know, to give the whys and the wherefores, and nobody didn't see this coming. You know, if you look back over recent history, the last 10 or 20 years that Putin has been in charge over there, or close to in charge over there, I mean, this was no surprise delivery.
Yeah, this isn't the first atrocity. Right. It's the worst atrocity, but it sure as fuck ain't his first.
And that's the frustrating thing about it, because there's already not a lot of people watching the evening newscasts or even some of the cable newscasts. So you've already got insufficient eyeballs looking at what's going on. But those who are tuning in are not getting anywhere near the comprehensive story. Check my math and see if I'm not right. I mean,
well, and if they're listening to Tucker Carlson, then he's telling them, well, you know, Putin's not that bad of a guy.
Oh, to hear him tell it, we're on the wrong side.
Yeah.
In this argument, in this mild disagreement. I'm sorry.
Yeah, because we had to kill off all those Nazis in Ukraine.
Right.
Oh, wait, this is where I say, you crow Nazis! Aye! You know, talk about being blind to the, you know, being blind to the, trying to pluck the beam out of your brother's eye because, and oblivious to the mote in your own. You know, really? We're going to worry about the Ukrainian Nazi problem? Have we already forgotten August of 2017 in Charlottesville?
Uh-huh. Robin, speaking of Nazis, today would have been the wedding anniversary of Adolf and Eva. Married on this day.
Some honeymoon.
Yeah.
Talk about an explosive relationship.
Okay, so there was still rice.
It was a smoking hot romance, Roger.
Yep, that it was.
Yeah, there was still rice on the revolvers in that lovely plush lined case.
Rice on the revolvers. Hold on.
Well, it was the next day or 2 days after they tied their little knot. That it went down, so to speak, you know.
Oh.
Minute rice, as a matter of fact, on the revolver.
You know, that shit's bad for birds.
Oh, I know, I know.
What was the cereal that was shot from guns?
Quaker puffed rice and puffed wheat.
Puffed white, yeah, wheat and rice?
Are you fucking kidding me? Was there a commercial for that?
Yeah,
isn't that the 1812 overture?
I believe so, yeah.
Puffed rice? I ate that shit when I was a kid.
They shot it from guns to make puffed rice.
And you can get, if they don't make it anymore, the next time you get a package with those styrofoam peanuts in it, put those in your Cap'n Crunch cereal bowl and get your favorite spoon and throw a little milk on it, and you get the same general.
Well, that's just nauseating, Scott. Thanks for everything.
But that's all only true if you don't believe the History Channel's Hunting Hitler show. You know, he made it to Argentina and lived up to be a 95-year-old man.
Oh, God.
On the History Channel. God, this fucking country.
And every can of that corned beef that's imported from Argentina, that's from his ranch.
Exactly.
The Lazy Swastika. I think it's the name of its spread down there.
Well, it is true that a lot of Nazis went to Argentina.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But that Hitler wasn't one of them.
That wasn't their favorite spot.
If he went, he went in a box.
Their favorite spot was Paraguay.
Shipped them to.
Yeah. And some of them went on through Argentina into Chile.
Yeah.
Yes.
And became priests to hide from their crimes.
Jeez.
And probably became child molesters in the process.
And they probably, if they were still alive, joined Pinochet's army.
In Paraguay, there are still German language towns.
Oh yeah,
yeah. In Valley,
if you've ever seen the Motorcycle Diaries with Gael Garcia Bernal when he was much younger, cute. You know, he plays the young Che Guevara, and the motorcycle trip that he and his buddy took. From Buenos Aires into Chile and up the Pacific coast through Bolivia and Peru to Venezuela, I think. And at one point, they're in Chile and they run across basically a German-speaking, if I recall correctly, a German-speaking Chilean. And it's like, yeah, I know where he came from. But we tend to forget that the European migration to the Americas, everybody didn't want to come to the English part of North America. There was a significant German migration to Mexico, and to Argentina. And if Flavio's listening, he can clue me in. Maybe even Brazil as well. One of the
my wife's paternal line came from Germany, World War One era, because her grandfather, prior to World War One, was the head of the German school in Lima, Peru, and when the Kaiser called him back to be part of the army in World War One, he said "fuck you" to the Kaiser. And stayed in Peru. Of course, he lost his
just German, like Donnie's
government
grandpa,
school.
Right? Grandpa or great grandpa.
And then he opened up his own private German school. And my wife, her high school, or her, all the way through school, she was taught in German. The only classes she got taught in Spanish was Peruvian history and the Spanish language class. All the rest of her studies were in German.
I'll be darned. Well, I was
Isn't
thinking. I was thinking about this.
Donnie's grandpa?
Same thing Donnie's grandpa did.
Which really screwed her up because she graduated from high school and then went to a Peruvian university where, of course, all the coursework was in Spanish, which was the language of the home. But she didn't know the biology terms for like heart and lungs and things like that in Spanish. And then she got her bachelor's from the university in Peru and then came up here to the States and got her master's and her PhD with the instruction language being English. So she had a kind of a hard time.
Well, just to, just
with
to
the,
yeah,
the
just
changes.
Just to show you how weird my mind is, I actually was doing some reading the other day because I'm following. You know, one of these days I'll get my face worked on, and you know, you can spend about as much money as you'd spend on a base model Porsche in the United States getting your facial feminization, but because of the exchange rate between dollars and pesos, it's a lot cheaper in Mexico, and there's some great work going on. So I saw a reference to a surgeon, and the first thing that popped into my mind was the name of a character from one of my favorite comedies, Scott Knows What It Is, The In-Laws. Do you remember the name of the senator in Tejada that they were originally supposed to meet up with, Scott?
No.
Senator Jesus Braunschweiger.
Isn't he corrupt?
Yeah, they all are, but at least this one don't make no bones about it. And so when I saw this guy's name, I immediately thought, "What, Dr. Jesus Braunschweiger?" I'm sorry, Roger.
Speaking of medical tourism, if you need a hip replacement, it is cheaper to buy your airplane ticket, go over to Europe. I believe it's Spain, but it might be Portugal. And you can spend 6 months there getting your surgery done and rehab, all the rest of it, and come home. And you'll have more money left at the end than getting a hip replacement done here in the United States.
Well, that's like, this Mexican deal takes place in Guadalajara. And what would cost you probably something approaching $100,000 in the United States is $14,000 cash on the barrel head in Guadalajara. And I've seen his results, and they're amazing. And that's a big difference.
Start doing this on this medical side of things. I'm getting really frosted over this $35 cap for insulin. That $35 is the copay. It's the United States government trying to subsidize the medical corporations to where the medical corporations get the same amount of money they get for the insulin. It's just that the people are only going to pay $35 for their monthly treatment. But the drug companies getting their... And that frosts my ass because the guy who invented insulin basically gave away the invention because he didn't think a life-saving concoction like insulin should be profitable. But excuse me. And so this is simply the government finding another way to subsidize the private industry, the same way they subsidize the insurance companies with the Affordable Care Act. The insurance companies didn't take the hit. They actually made more money after the Affordable Care Act than they made before it. And if this $35 insulin thing goes through, the pharmaceutical companies are going to make more money after that than they did before.
Yeah, well, I mean, welcome to capitalism. Unfortunately, I got to get out of here because we're over time. And I've just been informed by my son that I need to run an errand for him. So we will wrap up with all this. The back porch will, of course, continue in my absence after we finish with the on-air portion of the program. Thanks, everybody, for getting us down close to $1,000 in the hole for the month of April. Basically, that works out to almost an entire week of the month of April, and not counting my absences on Wednesday and Thursday. So, again, thank you so very much. We've been keeping this going on a month-to-month basis for almost 20 years. And, well, this is about as deep a hole as we've been in. Thank you for all the challenges. Thank you to Ralphs, and thank you to Steve. Remember, Laurel's Butter Challenge is still on the table. Check back earlier in the podcast to see what that entails. Thank you again. Thank you, Billable Rick. Thank you, Ralphs. Thank you. Thank you, Roger. And by the way, I checked PayPal. It did not go through. It might be a two-factor authentication thing, depending on how your system is set up. That's what one person told me. Thanks to our a la carte contributors of all forms all through the broadcast month. Thank you to our Patreon and PayPal subscribers. I will do the thank you for Patreon on the first program of May, because I like to make sure we thank our Patreon subscribers monthly. I apologize for being so scatterbrained. I didn't get it out today, because frankly, it took me a minute to realize that, well, April's over. I'm used to like doing it on the 30th or the 31st or something, but that's going to be tomorrow. Thanks to each and every one of you who shares your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever manner you so choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks in the chat room and in the old holler tree to Sparky. I hope you have a wonderful weekend. We'll all be curious to find out what's in the boxes. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Remember, brand new fresh Malloy on the way at 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 6 p.m. Pacific. The best place to listen to the first run of Malloy is headon.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, whiterosesociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And now proudly a union shop. Please stay safe. I'm going to do everything in my power to get my booster this weekend. I don't know why I've got a block about it this time. I've gotten right out there and gotten it done the last time. Weird. Keep wearing your mask. Stay safe. Wash your hands. Don't touch your face. Use your hand sanitizer. Maintain your social distance. And if you see two battling dipshit twins coming towards you down the street, like, I hate you. No, I hate you more. Avoid Lauren and Lauren and Marjorie like the plague, because they are. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Have a great weekend, everybody. Later.